Chris, mate, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you, Matthew.
I'm going to break format a wee bit for this one because there's lots of different angles I kind of want to come at. Place to start.
Yes.
Donegal.
Oh.
Let's go.
Whoa, this is right. You throw me a curveball immediately. I thought we were going to go straight in and talk business, but right, we're going to dwell.
Yeah,
still
so
business, right?
let's talk about like the importance of having a safe space, a place to get away from it all when you do so many things.
Right. Do you want me to tell you how Donegal came about first? Now, we might have to start at the end and kind of deconstruct it.
Oh, this is like a Quentin Tarantino movie. Let's go.
It is exactly. That's right. So let me see how I can structure this good for the listeners. So, yes, so I have bought, in the last year and a half, I've bought a beautiful little 100-year-old cottage in Downing's Donegal, where the West Coast. It's on Atlantic Drive. It is absolutely, it's my dream. It's just beautiful. By the way, guys, it is no mansion. It's got its own Instagram. If you look up at Souter Cottage, you'll get it.
I mean, like, so, every 100-year-olds, they come with a certain level of baggage.
Oh, flip. Now, to be fair, the guy that I bought it off had done a lot of the work to it, Matthew.
Nice.
So I've had to just kind of give it a little bit of an update. But here, let me describe to you how this came about.
Okay.
I'm 39 soon.
Congrats.
Right? Thanks, mate. I'm nearly 40. Thank you. I'm 39 soon, and I was at an event 2 years ago in the Europa Hotel. It was from one of our local kind of high performance mentor type people, a girl called Kim Calvert. And she invited me along to her her event, probably just to have me there because I'm well enough known and it'll be good to have me there as a PR stunt.
We'll take your social media shares as well.
Exactly. I'd like to think of her as a friend of mine too, right? So like I was there and that was grand. She'd done a mind, or like a some sort of technique type thing where in the middle of it, she stopped everything, right?
Okay.
And she started playing this lovely music and she got everybody to close their eyes and have a piece of paper in front of them.
Okay.
And it's like, right, we're going to do goal setting.
Yeah.
And right, I want you to think of your wildest dreams. What could you possibly, if you really wanted something, you had everything you ever want, or what could you ever want, I want you to write it down on this bit of paper. And honestly, Matthew, I opened my, after the music stopped and I opened my eyes, I'm looking at this blank page of paper. And I can say this with a straight face, I had nothing to write.
Wow.
Right? I was only 30. I think I'm either late 37 or 38 years old. I had achieved everything in life that I wanted to achieve at 37 year old.
So like give us like even some examples of what those would be.
Right. So growing up, you know, wanted a nice business.
Sure.
Wanted a nice big house.
Sure.
You know, loads of ground running. Wanted a wife. Wanted two kids. Mm-hmm. Wanted certain cars, certain watches. You know, the materialistic shit like golf clubs and all the stuff.
Yeah.
Health.
The stuff that's easy to tick off a list.
Yes, all that easy stuff. And do you know what, Matthew? I was there.
Yeah.
You know, financially secure, all the rest of that sort of stuff. Didn't really have a worry in the world.
Yeah.
But then the worry became, holy shit, I'm only 37 now. I had never set myself unattainable goals. There's people out there who will set themselves goals that they want a mansion in Saint-Tropez and a private jet with 15 Louis Vuitton handbags to take your luggage, right? That's not me, right?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at this bit of paper, looking at my wife. My wife, she must have scribbled down about 10 things. I'm going, oh, Jesus, well, that's going to be expensive, right? So she had about 10 written down. I'm going, Nicola. And I looked at her and there was this paper and I said, I can't fucking think of anything.
Yeah.
And she goes, are you sure? And I said, yes. I was like, I'm trying my best. See, if you gave me £1 billion right there and then, I had nothing to spend it on.
Mm-hmm.
I had all the cars I wanted. I said all the watches, I had all the flipping, the family, the two kids, the house,
sure.
And everything. And then I thought, well, actually Nicholas said, and he says, what about Donegal? I says, what do you mean about Donegal? He says, do you not always want a cottage in Donegal? And I said, right. Yep, I've got myself a goal. And then I wrote down, cottage in Donegal.
Nice.
Well, Matthew, within the next year, I now have a cottage in Donegal.
Unbelievable.
Right, so here comes the problem.
Right.
I've no more goals again. No, right, because I sold loads of watches and I sold cars and I've done all this sort of stuff. So now I've kind of went, but I've got more new dreams again. But that's how Donegal came about.
Yeah.
In this kind of goal setting technique that Kim used, I couldn't think of anything.
Interesting.
And it is, but here, I don't want to sound like a complete dick either on this, right?
Well, before you do what you're about to do, let me just say, like, fair play to you.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Because you know our culture.
Yeah.
It's hard to hear what you've just said for
totally.
A lot of people. And I think that that's a bit sad. Like, I heard something recently and they said, like, you know, if you're the type of person that you're filling up your car and you see someone drive past in a really nice car and your instant reaction is, oh, what a flippin' insert word here, what an idiot, or like, what an arsehole.
Yeah.
Like, what you're basically saying to yourself is, I can never drive a nice car because then I would be like an arsehole as well. Matthew, and it's that limited mindset that I think really bites us in the ass. And we think, we hide it under the pretense of we're being so humble or we don't need material things. Whenever actually, it's probably more so rooted in insecurity than anything else.
Totally. And that's one thing that I learned very, very young. I was always the guy, the kid, if you want to think of it, patting everybody else on the back. Mm. You know, I was like that from when I was no high from his primary school. And I was always the one that was everybody's friend. So I never had like a distinct set. I was never one of the cool kids nor one of the geeks.
Yeah.
I was always that guy in the middle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That all the hard lads would come and want to play football with me.
Yeah,
then all the geeks would want to come and talk, you know what I mean? Whatever. Yeah.
Super Mario,
whatever. You know? So I was always able to kind of be in the middle, and I was always very, and again, that comes from my upbringing too, Matthew. Like my dad and stuff would be very like that. Very much celebrating success in the world, never mind just locally.
Yeah.
You know, and I was always very, very positive person. I grew up very around a positive aura within the house too.
Where was home for you?
Home was Dundonald. I grew up in Dundonald. Very good. Now, family wise, my family are originally from Monaghan. basic. You know, the usual farmer story, one shoe between 10 of them, and you know what I mean? All this kind of stuff. Literally, our guys, my family, the Souter family, grew up with absolutely nothing, Matthew.
Yeah.
So whenever they came up north in the 60s, like, you know, it was hard. It was very hard, and they all worked. That's where this, you know, this work ethic that I promote, that's where this work ethic comes from within me. I've just watched it growing up.
Very cool.
That the best way to get somewhere in life, Matthew, is just to work as hard as you can for it. You know, and yeah, so it got to the point. So 37 year old, looking around me going, flip me. Do you know, because I won Business Person of the Year, and I was like, I was always doing all the TV stuff and all the radio stuff, good social media following.
Sure.
Lots of love from lots of people, and particularly my wife and my kids. Mum and dad were still alive. You know, my brother's a legend. He's my business partner. He was still with me. Like, honestly, Matthew, there was got to a point where I literally had living the dream. You know the way you talk about living the dream?
Yeah.
I was living the dream, mate.
Yeah.
But with that came then an issue. I was like, flip me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm starting to get this question, what are you going to do next? I'm thinking, right.
But you know what's interesting about that? I would say, like, the majority of people, and let's be honest, not everyone, there's a percentage of people who don't ever get there.
Yeah.
But then there is quite a large percentage of people that get there, but they get there in their 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
They retire, or they have the ability to retire, and they maybe take some time, and that there's not maybe not that like fire under their feet.
Yeah.
And then they're faced with that big question.
Exactly.
What now?
Yeah. And do you know,
you've got that at a young age. That's its own challenge.
It's its own challenge. And it worried me very, very quickly until I came up with it. It worried me for 5 minutes until I came up here. I want to college to Donegal. Right. So that was definitely, and it made me think, Matthew, after, you know, that what it started to make me questioning myself and my goals.
Sure.
Have I not set them high enough?
Yeah.
Am I successful?
Yeah.
You know, have I achieved what at my a pinnacle of what I wanted to achieve?
And like, is it enough?
Is
like,
it, yeah,
what
is
does
it enough
mean? What do what these things
enough?
Mean?
Like, yeah, and do you know what it really, it actually, it made me, I thought about this actually for quite a while afterwards, and I realised, Matthew, where my success truly lies is in the smile on my face.
Mm.
And all these other things that I was attributing to my success, which were generally materialistic, right?
Sure.
Or, well, I suppose you can't take the love of your wife was married, but you know what I mean? I was just the happiest guy going.
Yeah.
And I mean that.
Yeah.
And I've tried to develop that going forward, and trying to actually develop and work on my own mindset, and trying to make out what makes me tick. And it turns out, Matthew, that part of why I'm so happy with where I am is because I try to make other people happy and smile every single day of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I go out there to be the best possible human that I can be.
Sure.
And I have found by doing that, by helping everybody else and asking for nothing in return, I don't ask for anything.
Mm-hmm.
I will go out there and help anyone and never put my hand out.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually where a lot of my success and my inner worth has came from, which made me able to, number one, it's how I attained all that other stuff. But number two, it allowed me to be happy with it and not aim for, you know, flipping private jet and all the Louis Vuitton, you know, all that sort of stuff. I was just really happy with where I was.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that's where Donegal came from. Now I've done Donegal. I now have to reset my goals. I'm going to tell you about them in a minute. So, again, I do quite a wee bit of mentoring on the side with people, right? I don't do it professionally yet, which will come, but I'll not do it yet. And what I try to tell people is that, yes, set goals, but goals can change, Matthew.
Every time.
Do you know, at that point in time, whenever Kim asked that question, my goals were kind of written in stone. Mm-hmm. Now that we've been there and she asked that and I answered it with Donegal, I have now had to write new goals. Mm-hmm. And now I've got other things coming on down the line, which includes more businesses and coffee. And I'm going to tell you all about that later on. But yeah, I just felt, for about a week or maybe 2 weeks after coming out of that that event, I was almost overwhelmed, Matthew. And actually, there was a lot of guilt started seeping in.
I understand that.
Do you know what I mean? And I had never thought about it until that time.
Yeah.
You know, this watershed moment in my life where I'm being asked, Chris, what do you want to do yourself? You know, if you could, if I gave you £1 billion, what do you want to be? And I'm like, shit, fucking done everything, right?
But go back for a second. So Donegal itself,
yeah.
Like, why Donegal? Like, why was it not like, oh, you've always wanted that, like, beach house in Portugal? Or why was it not that? Like, why specifically Donegal? Because I remember...
just thinking about it.
Like Donegal is my... Yeah. And I know it's not... Like, you can't just claim a place for your own. It's, like, my special place, you know. I was married in Donegal.
Me too.
One of our family... Where did you get married?
I got married in Solace, Loch Ness Castle.
Unbelievable.
Did you get married there?
No, we got married in Ballyliffin. And, like, one of our family values is to spend a week in Donegal every quarter.
Wow.
Because it does so much for... me as a person,
yes.
My own well-being.
Yes.
It does so much for my marriage.
Yes.
And now we've, just starting to grow our family, we anticipate it to mean so much for our kids. You know, we just had our first trip there where we brought our daughter, she's one, and she had a blast.
Congratulations, mate.
And I just think that, like, there's something different up there.
Well, that's you. You know that is their tagline.
I did it accidentally, I promise. Yeah. Yeah.
It's different up here. Up here. Hashtag up here, it's different.
Yeah.
That's the Donegal tourism. But it is. Our tagline. Right. You will get it. I'm preaching to the converted here then, right? Because I talk about this all the time to people. See, the minute I cross the border, no matter where I'm going, and I enter and I see the signs, I'm in Donegal, my heart beats slower.
Wow.
Categorically. My shoulders drop. And I'm not the most stressed out person. In fact, I don't even do stress, right? But I'm animated, right? I am animated and full of energy, right?
Yeah.
The minute I cross the border and I'm in the Donegal and I see the mountains and I breathe the air and I just see, man. Do you know, it's really difficult to put into words.
What is that all about? Like,
I don't know. There's something about it, Matthew.
You talk about crossing the border. Mm-hmm. I've only experienced that once in my life, right? I lived in New York for 3 years.
Yes.
I lived in Manhattan.
Yes.
High pressure.
Yes.
Big R's. Crazy environment, right?
Yes.
That's a short story. When we would cross the George Washington Bridge into New Jersey, I felt the weight of the world melt off my shoulders. Leaving New York, it changed me as a person, even if it was literally for like an hour, never mind coming home. So what is it, I don't know, about life in Northern Ireland? Or if you flip the question, what is it about crossing the border that drops your shoulders?
Do you know what? I think it has to be intrinsic. It has to be in you. Mm-hmm. You have to know what you're going to expect. And I think that's the crack. I know what I'm going to expect. Mm-hmm. I'm going to cleaner. The air up there in the West Coast is just spectacular.
Yeah.
And it's just the way of life. You know what Donegal people are like? You know, everything I'll just do tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to get work done up in the house, in the cottage, and you phone a guy here, but you might look at building this wall here. And he goes, sure, Chris, but no, that I don't know, promises. When can you start? Sure, get a chat tomorrow. Like, all right, we'll talk tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes, it's the next day, and everything is just a little bit more relaxed up there. And don't forget, it's one of, if not the least populated counties in the island of Ireland.
Wow.
For me, it is the most beautiful. And again, it just suits my eye, Matthew. Why I am out there in Downings, I play a lot of golf.
Nice.
That's right. I used to play a lot of golf before I got so busy. And my favorite golf course is Rosapenna.
Cool.
My cottage is like, as the crow flies, not even a mile from Rosapenna Golf Club.
Congrats.
So, and yes, this is actually a good part of the story because I know Frank might end up listening to this. I went up to play Rosapenna for my 30th birthday. So I've only been up there 9 years.
Yeah.
And Frank Casey Jr., who owns the golf club, it's actually, he's at the desk. He works the desk. Like, you know, this is, they own the whole area and they work in it. It's not like they own it and, you know, fly on their private jet with their Louis Vuitton. They work in their golf club and in their hotel and everywhere else. Yeah. And Frank and John and all the Casey family just made me feel so at home. Every time I went up, we just kind of clicked. And then he would introduce me to other people that have businesses and stuff in Downings there. And I would be going up and meeting them. And honestly, Matthew, they just literally, they just made me feel so at home. Mm. And I made a decision there and then, like it's within the Florida 2 years gone up. It's like, I want to live here. And in fact, you know what, Matthew, I will retire up there. I will live. You will find me some point in my life up there with a guitar on my balcony, you know, or a banjo, maybe take out the banjo, playing Deliverance, you know, that sort of thing. I just, oh man, I'm in love with, see, just me and you talking about this now, I'm getting sweaty palms.
Yeah.
I just want to get in my car and drive. And you know what, Matthew, see, having that, I cannot, because you know what it's like, mm-hmm. I cannot begin to tell you what it's like to have a bolt hole in Donegal, particularly one as cool as Souter Cottage, right?
Yeah.
And I am so proud. I am so proud because, see, to make it happen, I'll not go into all the financy details and stuff on the podcast, but I literally had to bust my balls to make that work. And again, this is because I set that goal and I wanted to achieve it.
Yeah.
And here, I'll tell you how it came about.
Tell me.
This is a great story,
okay,
right?
Okay, hit me.
And the listeners hopefully love this. So, I had bid on a house in, let me see, January 2020. Let me see, what is this now? January 2019, I'd bid on a house, right?
Okay.
Made the mistake of taking everybody up to have a look at it. Had it bought, you know what I mean? I had it bought. This is mine. I'm buying it. It's mine. I have it bought. Told too many people about it, Matthew, and let's just say the price doubled within 2 weeks,
bro.
I had it bought off the bank. I had a deal done with the bank, right? Buying it, right? Deal done with the bank. Anyway, I was fine. I told too many people about it. Anyway, so it wasn't for me. So all of a sudden then lockdown came. Or was that 2020? When was lockdown?
Lockdown was, I'm going to say February, March 2020.
Right, so it was January 2020, right?
Gotcha.
That's when I, so got out bed and that was gone. Lockdown came, and because of the whole staycation thing, houses in Donegal
were
already on their way up.
Yeah.
See up where we are up there, because there's so many cool amenities, the houses in Downings and that area went through the roof. It actually priced me out. I no longer had the money to move up there. I couldn't afford it. Right? It was gone. So, but again, with me being the super duper positive guy, I said, you know what? Something will happen. I know it. And Nicola was like, oh, it's okay. Look, we'll you know, work something out. We'll pimp ourselves out. We'll make it work, whatever. Do you know what I mean? I was like, no, you don't want to buy me, love. But maybe you'll get lots of money for you. But I said, something will come up on Matthew. I shit you not. Right? This is so bizarre. This is what happens to me. This is the universe. I'm one of those universe people, right? So I just decided one Saturday afternoon. This is all the random events. Saturday afternoon, my friend was running a drive-in cinema down in Newton Arts.
Love
David, down at Downey's, right? And they were showing Toy Story 2, right?
Great, great show.
I'm going to take my daughters. We're going to get in the car and we're going to go to the drive-in
Big
cinema.
Big bullseye and all.
Right? Oh,
the scenes in those movies, right?
Amazing.
Right. I don't know who it was. I think it was Woody walking around the Watsits.
Yes.
You know, the purple, or no, the orange crisps.
Orange ones, orange meat.
With all the powder. And then the other wee scene was, you know, the old man who stitches Woody's arm up, and there's this scene, old man, big glasses, he's got this wee trinket box and all these wee things to, like, you know, fix all these wee tiny dolls and all.
Oh, the just details. It's amazing.
And, like, that's a really old movie.
It is.
And those scenes are remarkable.
Unbelievable. Like, whoever wrote that stuff is just on a level. Like, I know you do writing, so you can appreciate that, like, the detail there. Unreal.
Gorgeous.
So we're down watching Toy Story 2, right? So here, nice sunny afternoon. Here. Girls, do you fancy an ice cream? Yes, Daddy, I'll have an ice cream. Okay, there's an ice cream truck. So I get out of the car and I dand over the ice cream truck. Can I have $2.99 there, please, with a flake dipped in chocolate? No problem, Chris. There's your $2.99s. And here, went over back, dropped them into the kids, and went back over to get myself one. Turned out I knew the guy that was serving the ice cream. Ah, Souter, how are you? I'm doing great. Well, we're doing great. Says, well, here, suppose all your holiday plans are scrapped now with all the COVID. And I was like, you know what? Honestly, no, I had nothing booked.
Yeah.
I'm trying to buy a house in Donegal. I'm trying to save everybody money I can. Although the flipping house prices are going through the roof. I don't think I'm going to be able to afford it. He goes, my boss has a house in Donegal.
Unbelievable.
Matthew. He goes, you're joking me. I said, no, whereabouts is it? He goes, I think it's in some place called Downers. I'm going, is it in Downings? Aye, Downings, that's it. I'm like, here, would he sell it?
Unbelievable.
What it was? I just said, would he sell it?
He goes,
I should know what he's like. He'd sell anything. I said, here's, and he told me his name. It turned out I knew him too.
Crazy.
Matthew, I shit you not, excuse me for swearing. He got on the phone there and then, and we more or less struck a deal on the phone, standing at an ice cream truck in Newton Arts at a drive-in cinema. And that is categorically what happened, right? So
obviously, there was a couple of months then when I had to go and see it, right? Sure, yeah. Here, would you hear this? There was, he had a tenant in it. He had somebody living in it, right?
Right.
And he didn't want to tell the tenant that I was buying it in case I didn't buy it. Yes. And then the tenant moved out.
Yeah.
So I had to go up and knock the door and pretend to be fixing the roof for the landlord.
Chris, what the heck?
I'm not joking you. I've got the videos to prove it, right? So I went up and knocked the door. Hi, James, how you doing? Nice, look, Mark sent me up here to have a look at the roof. And,
flip
like,
me.
I was going to buy this place without even seeing inside it. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm in the flipping house, right? With my mobile phone down by my by what do you call it, you know, trying to take wee videos of it so that I can show the wife what we are spending our life savings on, right? And then I'm looking around and going, oh my goodness gracious me. And it was a tip. Oh dear help, it was an absolute tip.
Yeah.
But I seen past that and I seen, you know, the potential, right?
You just saw the Airbnb images in your head.
I just seen Donegal. I had nothing else but just this Donegal. Oh my goodness, blinkers. So anyway, to cut a long story short, we agreed a deal. And again, Matthew, I told him I would buy it and gave him a deposit before I actually had the money.
Brilliant.
I bought that place without having the cash. And I then had to find the money. And it was just between, I opened the mask business, I started doing face cuts and face masks. It took off, it flew, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
I sold my kit car, I sold other car stuff I had, I sold watches, I sold...
Yeah. Say goodbye to your Submariners.
Yeah, I flipped it with a Bitcoin. I got all in on it. I said, I bought this, I've gave this guy a ton of money as a deposit.
Yeah.
I need to make this work, because if I don't, I'm shafted.
Yeah.
And Matthew, I made it work.
Good man.
Yeah, I made it work.
Brilliant.
And here we are now. And Souter Cottage is absolutely flipping beautiful. I absolutely love it. In fact, I might go straight after this here. You've got me all wound up. I want to get straight in my smart car and drive straight there and light the fire and sit there with a cup of tea in my rocking chair.
But that's the thing. Look, it's so accessible.
It's class.
And that's why I love living specifically in Northern Ireland, but I love living on this island.
Yes.
Because it is so accessible. Like, I just got back from Germany. My wife's German.
Yes.
We love going to Germany. It's beautiful. But you can't go to the beach in 20 minutes. You can't go to the mountains in 20 minutes.
You are so right.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Everything's on a smaller scale, no doubt about it. But it's just at your fingertips, and I love it.
Matthew, see trying to get that into the kids, inverted commas, guys, if you're inverted my commas here, that we live in one of the most amazing places in the entire earth to live. Our standard of living is ridiculously high.
Mm-hmm.
We have every amenity that you could ever ask for. We've got our national health system. You know, we've got this. We've got the most beautiful scenery you could ever ask for, between even just Northern Ireland itself, North Coast, all down our East Coast. And then you can flip over to the South and go Donegal and flipping right down Mayo, Clare, County Kerry. Do you know, Matthew, I am the biggest, biggest fan of, number one, Northern Ireland, but number two, just Ireland as a whole.
Yeah, I
love it, mate.
Yeah,
I love
it. Cool.
And if I hear, honestly, see, if I never leave this island ever again in my life, I will die with a big smile on my hand.
100%.
Or smile on my face.
Smile on your hand.
Smile on my hand.
It'd be unreal, wouldn't it?
With a biro. I just love it. I love it.
So I want to go back a wee bit. I actually want to go back to Frank.
Yeah.
And it really... you piqued my curiosity, the way you described Frank and the way you admired Frank.
Yes.
And the way you described him was, he's someone who owns a business, but he works in the business.
Yes.
And I think, you know, of course, we admire people and attributes of them that we like about ourselves, or we want to see in ourselves, or we aspire to in ourselves. And you're someone who owns businesses and you work in them.
Everyone.
You're hands on.
Yeah.
You roll the sleeves up, you get stuck in, and you enjoy that.
Yeah.
Tell me about your coffee.
Right. So,
what were you doing this morning?
Flip it. Well, this is every morning at the minute. So, over lockdown, my wife Nicola is a yoga teacher, and yoga kind of went south over lockdown, as you can imagine.
Of course.
It actually started out unbelievable whenever lockdown one happened and we went on the Zoom, and all of a sudden, like, she had 120 in each class at a fiver ahead.
Yeah.
Thinking, we're going to be millionaires. My two houses in Donegal. But then very quickly the numbers declined and declined and declined, and you could just get it all free on YouTube. So we needed to think of something else and a bit more robust for Nicola. And Nicola is a huge coffee aficionado. She's a coffee self-obsessed coffee snob. Excuse me. So we looked into starting to do coffee, because everywhere you look, it's bloody everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm thinking, well, it must be good if everybody else is into it. And it was something that I kind of fell in love with very, very quickly. It's it's specialty coffee particularly. It's such a really cool, quirky gig.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so much to it that people don't see, and that's what I like about
it. It's like the complexity in terms of flavour and craft and science of whiskey without having to have like 10 billion quid and like 50 years to make whiskey.
Yes. You know what? Actually, coffee and wit are very much similar that
it's
way.
It's really crazy, isn't it?
People just see them as an end product and something you drink, and that's great. But then when you delve deeper into the actual, as you used that word, complexity of how it gets from a cherry into a brown bit of water in your cup, do you know what I mean? It's amazing. So it intrigued me. So, yeah, we started Souter Coffee over lockdown, launched it kind of December last year, just as Bean Only, while I then built a truck over lockdown 2 or 3 or 4, whatever that was, over Christmas.
I'm going to jump in and interrupt you for one second. You'll enjoy this, right?
Yes.
So I know you primarily as a tailor.
Yes.
That's not appropriate, but that's how I know you.
Yeah.
And I just was literally speaking to someone out there in the baths, and they said, who are you interviewing today? I said, Chris Souter. And do you know what she said?
Yes.
The coffee guy? Question mark.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
That's me, where is she? I love her.
So sorry, keep going. I just wanted to give you that wee tip.
So I'm now the coffee guy. I'm going to put that on the Instagram. So we started Souter Coffee. Do you know what, Matthew? For us, both Nick and I, it is actually, this is something that Nico stole on me when he done his podcast.
Nico.
One of my slogans is passion before profit, right? And I really hope he doesn't coin that and he gets the credit for it, because it's mine, Nico, it's mine.
But you know him, right? He will.
He'll make
a billion off it.
He will, yes, he'll be on his God-tier t-shirts and everything. But yeah, passion before profit. So rather than just try and find a bean that we could make loads of money at, we said, right, let's make our own bean. Because again, with regards to the tailoring and the suits and just everything else that I've kind of been into, I want my name on it. I want to put personality into it. I want it to be unique, different than everybody else's. So we hooked up with these guys, these two really cool guys in Newcastle called Sleeper, and we developed our own bean called 1111.
Awesome.
So we launched it December, went really, really well. In fact, like the first 200 or 300 bags of it, Matthew, I hand delivered around the entire country. And that meant like one day I drove specifically to Bundoran to deliver an 11 pounds bag of coffee.
Because
that's just what I do.
Yeah.
You know, you can see if you buy stuff from my businesses, you get me.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get somebody else. It hinders me in many ways because I could grow my businesses, Matthew. I could have 50 Souter Brothers menswear stores and 50 coffee trucks and all the rest of it. But it's just not me.
It's not fun for you.
I'm not doing it. Not doing it for the money. It needs to be profitable, yes, because it needs to work. But I'm not doing it. I don't aspire to have a Ferrari. I don't aspire to have a flipping jet. You know what I mean? I've got a wee house in Donegal. It comes back to that goal thing.
Yeah.
I'm really happy with kind of my lot, right? So, the whole passion for profit thing meant, let's do our own bean. So while we then have our own bean, let's do our own coffee truck. Mm-hmm. So I got on the eBay one night, bought a miniature camper, went over the next day. Because again, Matthew, I'm very flippant and very direct. See, if I'd have said I'm going to do something, I just make it happen.
Yeah.
Categoric, matter of fact, blinkers on, no outside influences, I'm just making it happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So literally me and Nicola, I got into bed one night, says, babe, what do you see this? Flicked up this wee camper. What do you think of that? She goes, what's that for? I said, I'm going to make you a coffee truck. Never mind the beans, right? She says, forget the beans, right? We're going to do a coffee truck. She goes, what do you mean? Watch, bid. So literally bid there and then, you know, and honestly, I'll be screaming. As it was starting to creep up, I was thinking, am I doing the right thing here? Oh shoot, I've bought this. So anyway, we bought it. The thing, right, I've bought it now. Christ, right, I'm going to have to build it. So over the next 4 months, Matthew, I built the coffee truck, and it's called Souter Coffee. It's out at the Moat Park in Dundonald beside our kids' primary school, which is amazing.
Beautiful.
It's serving coffee 7 days a week, and it's flying.
Wow.
So that then has now led into the new business, the new venture, which is called Souter & Co.
Right.
So Nicola and I have partnered with the most amazing chef called Chef Anna Devlin. And we have came together and we're opening our first bricks and mortar coffee shop in Hollywood.
No, you're not.
Oh, yes. And it opens in the first week, November.
Chris.
And Matthew, again, I'm going to state this in this podcast because this is a big platform. By the year of N2, I plan to have 10 of them.
There you go.
And again, so there's my next goal.
So why do you want 10 of these and not 10 of, say, you know, your tailors?
Yes, so that's right. Honestly, can't answer that question. Just woke up one morning and said, I want 10.
Fair play.
And I literally don't have any foundation for it.
I have to say, I have zero foundation. I just appreciate an honest answer.
100%.
Because you see people sometimes squirm on the mic.
I don't know.
And you see them start to fabricate something because they might know themselves. Mm. So now I'm saying they're, you know, it's wrong what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're literally just trying to like fill the silence.
Yeah.
But sometimes we don't know why we want these things or why we do these things.
100%. And again, I don't even know why it's 10. I just want 10. And
okay, so if you could open one anywhere else in the country,
yes.
Where?
Well, I've got 2, 3, and 4.
Very nice.
More or less done. So they'll hopefully be open by Easter, okay? 2 in Belfast. 1's going to be hopefully in Antrim, okay?
Brilliant.
Number 5's going to be Port Rush or Port Stewart.
Of course. I mean, are you even a coffee shop if you're not
I
there?
I know. Like? Flips it. You have to have something up there. Number six, actually just had a chat with a guy today, is going to be out to Lisburn direction.
You know what? I born and bred Lisburn.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real untapped market there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who are very hungry and thirsty for some quality stuff.
Some proper stuff, yeah. There's plenty of good stuff too.
Like. And actually, you know, a good example of like where the demand is, you just look at the success of O Donuts, O Go, their container.
Yeah.
They have done amazing because they've tapped into that Lisburn market that sometimes gets a wee bit overlooked. You know?
It doesn't, you think? It's
a huge area.
Huge catchment.
Huge area.
Yeah. And affluent catchment too. You know, Lisburn's a pretty wealthy enough place to be. So yeah, we're going to hopefully have one on there. And then the last four, I plan to then do the last four, maybe sort of Mid-Ulster, one sort of Derry, London, Derry, one Enniskillen, and try and spread it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Matthew, whether it happens or not, here. Look, but like I haven't not done what I've said I'm going to do yet.
So, look, I
think I'll do it all right.
Yeah.
And look, here, I'm just going to have so much fun doing it.
Yeah.
I've got a model that's built now, that a very profitable model that makes it, as long as I can get the right unit and employ the right people, the rest of the back end of the business looks after itself.
Sure.
Okay. So if I get the right unit and the right people, it's a categoric no-brainer that it will make money.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have confidence in the brand that we're going to build.
Mm-hmm.
The flagship store is going to be the Hollywood store, and that's going to be the one where we do the most, just the higher end type stuff.
Sure.
The other ones might be a little, kind of a little bit less than that. Maybe some even just that might just do coffee treats and maybe toasties and stuff.
Totally.
But we're going to build the Hollywood one as the place to be for coffee treats and brunch, and try and raise the level. It's already been, you know, it's kind of, there's plenty of great coffee shops out there.
Yeah.
We just want to go another wee step above them. Mm-hmm. If we can. We're going to give it a go and see. Because like our coffee's probably one of the highest rated coffees on the market at the minute in any takeaway store.
Wow.
You know, the coffee that we use is, it's well in the 90s and it's great. And like, you know, it's high-end coffee. It's too expensive, really, to serve in takeaway cups. But we do it anyway and just take less margin. You know, and we use a lovely pastry chef called Kinnan Folk. She's a Michelin star girl. Her and her hubby David, Maya and David, and their treats, Matthew, are just on a level.
Class, mate.
So, you know, our ingredients, the cake that we're making is all made with the finest ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what happens when you put the finest ingredients together. See, as long as you can stir it up and cake it, or stir it up and cook it, it's going to make one hell of a cake, mate.
Yeah.
So
this might be a bit of a dead end. This is where I want to go. And actually, this is kind of like maybe what I actually wanted to talk about today. And if it's a dead end, it's a dead end. We move on.
I'm an open book meeting, literally asking.
So I'm like in a bit of a situation where I've built this thing called Best of Belfast.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
I'm like you. If I'm not in the business, I don't want to be. I don't care.
Yes.
Like, you know, there was opportunity at various points of the journey to, you know, franchise this and Best of Ireland and like then have a Best of Cork and da da da. And I was like, no disrespect, I don't want to talk to people in Cork.
Yes.
Like, I love Northern Ireland.
It doesn't get you out of bed.
It doesn't get me out of bed. I can't do this forever and I won't do this forever. And I've talked about maybe doing 500 episodes and calling it quits.
Okay, wow.
So there is a milestone in place.
Yes, there is.
And that, as a result, has put a bit of a timeline in my life.
Yeah.
The way I look at Best of Belfast is, this has been what got me into this world. This is where I've learned more than I could have possibly learned anywhere else.
Yes.
And I have a feeling that this is the foundation for what's to come next.
Yes.
Do you feel that the Taylor side of your life
100%.
was the foundation that everything else can be built upon?
Yes, because it gave me the finances and it gave me the freedom to do it. Because let's get one thing that a lot of people won't know. I am not a one-man band and with regards to the Taylor shop. I've got my big brother there.
Yeah.
And me and him get on the very, very best. William doesn't really have any, he doesn't really want nor need to do anything else. He's just happy enough doing that.
Yeah.
So him being in that business has gave me the freedom to go out and do all the other stuff that I do.
Yeah.
Because I know I can rely on and lean on him to make sure that place is running right when I'm not there.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it has. And plus, look, we've built that little business up to be quite, like within, it's very successful within its own right.
Yeah.
But within the industry, you know, we're, Matthew, the Souter Brothers is held, we're up there in the top cheapest in the country and in the whole country of Ireland, we would be in the top three. You know, with regard, maybe not regards to turnover, right? But with regards to success from notoriety and just the quality of stuff that we put out, we're, you know, there are plenty of other people that have multiple shops which would turn over more money.
100%.
But from a success perspective, that wee shop has been an absolute.
So then give me, and this is probably like where we, in a traditional interview would have started, give me your like Suter's brother's story.
Story, right.
Like give me the like, how did it start? Give me a wee bit of the arc, a wee bit of the journey, some of the highlights along the way. And then finish off, if you can, when did you decide to then kind of like spread the wings a little bit more and pursue other things for yourself personally?
Well, here, yes, let me give you a little brief rundown of who I am. Yeah. Right, Chris Suter. The Donald Primary, went to Grosvenor, right? After Grosvenor, went to Queen's University and studied electrical and electronic engineering.
No, you did
I am
not.
A bloody, I'm a B-Eng, mate.
What?
I'm Chris Suter Beng.
And you finished it?
Oh, aye. I'm from B-Eng now here. When I say finished it, while I was at Queen's, there's a lot of stuff people don't know about me, Matthew, right? When I was at Queen's, I hooked up with my then best buddy, Chris Quinn, and we started our first business when we were 17, which was a car audio business called SQ Design, right?
Brilliant.
And we were fitting fancy car stereos and all that, big subwoofers and speakers.
I wouldn't have put you down for like a techie.
I know, mate. People don't know this about
like
me.
A
like, you know,
techie,
right?
I would not have put you down.
So while going through Queen's, after we went for like the first year and then realized this university's shit. My God, I can't hack this. So anyway, we're making plenty of money. Let's stuff university.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I had kind of left university after the first year. And then obviously mum and dad found out about this. And I was still living at home. And I was like, Christopher, see if you leave university. There's the front door. Take your bags, pack your bags and get out. And I was like, actually, you don't want to leave the house just yet.
Yeah.
So, okay, mum, I'll go back to university. So what I used to do is I used to get up and pretend to go to university, but then go up to the workshop.
Brilliant.
We had a workshop and just literally just went to work. Told mum and dad I was at uni and I was working. So it can't, but obviously you still need to pass exams.
Yeah,
so
do,
lucky enough, I had made some really good friends within uni. And honestly, Matthew, this literally makes a mockery of the education system up there. I was able to cram like a week before each exam at the end of the semester or end of the term. Itty bitty bits of knowledge. They would have drawn me or written me out like a short list of what they thought was going to be on
the exam
papers.
Yeah.
Because see, if you look back over the last 6 years of the exam papers, the questions were generally the same, but they maybe just changed a few bits and pieces in it, right?
Yeah.
So, and lucky enough, again, with my luck, I happened to hit Matthew every single flipping exam. I revised two questions and just sucked it in and regurgitated it.
Yeah.
And I passed my exams. Now, I didn't pass them well.
Sure.
But I still done enough to get the degree, right?
Yeah.
And do you know what the funniest thing was? My final year project. Oh, Matthew, can't even believe I'm going to tell you this. But anyway, right? My final year project. So that's one thing you can't kind of, you know, you can't cheat on, if you want to think of that. Because I almost made like I was cheating, but it wasn't. I was just using the system to my advantage, right?
Yeah.
I was doing my final year exam was on amplifiers. I found this Iraqi guy online that had published a flipping dossier on the exact sort of amplifier systems that I was researching.
Yeah.
Matthew, I should you not. I copy and pasted.
No, you didn't, Chris Suter.
Yes, I did. I'm telling you now.
Oh, Chris.
Here, I can't get arrested for this. Sure, I can't. Right, no, I can't. I plagiarized this poor Iraqi's flipping final year project into my final year project, changed a few bits and pieces, sealed through with like a 60% mark on it or something out there.
My
got final year project marked off. Got enough in the rest of the exams, Matthew. And yeah, graduated. Now, would you hear this is even how stupid it gets and how embarrassing, right? So I only graduated with a third class honours, right?
Sure.
But my percentage was 49.4%.
Oh, man.
I was, when you worked it back, Matthew,
so
I was three marks in any of my papers off getting 49.5, which round about the 50, which you gave me a 2-2.
Oh, bro.
And I had the audacity to ask for six papers to be remarked.
Oh.
And I, you know what I mean? I'm thinking, I've really made a mockery. I've never went, didn't go to uni.
Literally
cheated on my, my final year project paper. Literally just made a flipping pissed, sure. just a piss horse of this. Yeah. And I came back, everyone of them came back, no. So I said, all right, I'll hop in off from a third.
Yeah.
So, but here, I'm still a B-inch, right?
100%.
Still a B-inch, so that was fine. And then the audio car audio business went from strength to strength. And that then morphed itself into a car modification shop. So we were like Pimp My, I don't know if you remember Pimp My Ride.
I do, mate. I'm so surprised. I did not expect any of this from you.
We were Pimp My Ride in Northern Ireland. We were
Need for Speed Underground.
Yes.
Next level. Get me a carbon fiber hood right now.
Matthew, that was me.
I want neon blue lights under my
that
car.
That was me.
Can you give me a spoiler?
That was SQ Design. And we were, again, the way we did things, we were the number one modification shop in the country.
Oh, that is hilarious.
We won awards left, right, and centre. We're on the front cover of Max Power magazine, Modified Motors magazine, Red, or what do you call Fast Car. We done, people were doing features on us. We, you know, anytime there's a car show, it was our Suter and Quinn and all our fancy stuff. So, but here, as that, like, that kind of then morphed itself from car modification into car accident repair. Okay, so we were at this.
Naturally.
Yes, it did. So, and again, because there was more money at it, right? Yeah. And obviously, our cars started coming with nice wheels and mm-hmm. body kits and nice stereos at that time. So the younger kids weren't spending as much money doing up the cars.
Yeah.
So yeah, we morphed into
that. Yeah, because you would get like a Peugeot, like 206, and pimp the crap out of it.
The best. And everybody's car was unique.
Yeah,
so, you know,
yeah,
people come here, Chris, like, I want a pink and I want a purple stripe up the middle of it, and I want chrome wheels. And
no, everyone gets suspension. like a pretty new Ford Fiesta, and just that's it.
Maybe lower.
It's red.
Yeah, exactly. And like your friend has a blue one. Yeah. You know what I mean? Oh, we'll take the blue one over there. But that was all. You know, back then it was all flipping fiberglass skirts and carbon fiber spoilers, and it was the, honestly, Matthew, it would never change. It was a brilliant time of my life.
Hilarious. Because so this is like in around the uni age and
so 04 uni 04, and then we opened our business properly in early 2006. Very so nice. We're working at our garages until then we actually opened SQ Design as a body shop in 06. Mm-hmm. And it went for 5 years, and we'd done really, really well. But the problem was, any money that we made, we flipping spent. Right? So again, I was into high performance cars and Subarus and Evos and all that sort of stuff. And I was buying new turbos for them and big wheels and whatever else. And you know, you got £1,000 in this. And I was like, here, I've got a grand. Right, okay, here. That turbo's £2,000. I will buy it and I will pay it off. And honestly, Matthew, that's where I learned the vast majority of my business mistakes. I made so many flipping mistakes in that you wouldn't believe. I blew so much money.
Yeah.
But again, I'm one of those guys, Matthew, I have to learn myself. You could sit there and tell me, Chris, to do X, you need to do A, B, and C, and you will get Y. Mm-hmm. I need to do it myself. That's great, Matthew. Thanks for that. But if you don't mind, let me flip it up myself.
Yeah.
So, one of the biggest things it didn't do was keep the tax man paid up.
Oh, no, oh, Chris. Man,
I know. And see, once I left the business, the tax man came knocking the door. And because, dear help him, but if, I don't know if Quinn will ever listen to this, but the business went bankrupt after about a year after I left.
Yeah.
And that's when Mr. Taxman came, though, because he had no money. He had the business, you know, the place was bankrupt, zero.
Of course, yeah.
But of course, I'm then in Suter Brothers and starting to make money.
Yeah.
And anyway, that didn't work out well.
That was really tough.
So I learned a lot of lessons. Pay the HMRC, Taxman.
I heard something recently, and they were saying, you know, like business is kind of like, well, business and children, I think was the analogy, or like pancakes. It's like you always spoil the first one.
Yes, you do. Absolutely. That makes perfect sense. And that's, look here, I learned so much, even from an HR perspective, and my own health too, Matthew. I have really, really bad lungs, right?
Do you?
I have a mild case of COPD. I've got bad asthma and then mild COPD, right?
Do you?
And a lot of that is industry based, because I used to spray cars and rub eyes upon stuff with no mask. You know what I mean? And again, not because crazy. I was just thinking I was cool, because I was just so busy and I just had to get the stuff done.
Just as an aside, how did you like mitigate your own risk and your own comfort level with risk during the pandemic because of your lungs?
I feel that I am invincible.
Okay.
Truth. Honestly, I have this thing, Matthew, in my head that I'm not going to die until I'm 87.
Right.
Don't ask me why. Again, it's one of those things.
Yeah, so it's like,
I don't know.
It's a 10 coffee
shops. It's flipping in my head. I'm not going to die in 87. Well, COVID's not going to get me.
So you just felt like, it's not my time. I'm okay.
Exactly. And you know what? After my lungs actually got better over lockdown, Matthew. Because within the tailoring industry, within our shop, clothes create a lot of dust, of a lot of fiber dust. Mm-hmm. That's actually not a great environment for me to be in either. Okay, it's better than the bloody car body shop. Going around with all these aerosols and solvents and all that kind of stuff. And carcinogens that are literally killing me day by day.
Yeah.
And by the way, whenever I was leaving, and one of the reasons why I had to leave the car body shop, because my doctor says, Chris, if you continue this another 6 months, he says you're not going to see 40. He says categorically, your lungs are scrap. Okay. He says categorically, if you do not get out of that business, you will be dead by the time you're 40. I was like, Okay, Doc.
Got the message.
Right. Oh, it's all right. And yeah, so hold on. Come to the lockdown thing in a minute. Yeah, I just want to let you know how I get into Suter Brothers then, okay? So back then, the shop was called Suter Men's. It was my dad and my brother. And I used to close the body shop for 2 weeks at Christmas time and a week at Easter and just and over the 12th and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because it was a family business, any time that I closed the body shop, I then went to work in the men's shop from when I was 13-year-old.
Brilliant.
So I was always there. And me and my dad are walking around from Lawsuit to Suter Brothers. So we had two shops, one called Lawsuit, one called Suter Menswear. We were walking around one Christmas Eve, and it would have been the Christmas Eve of 2010, 11. And he was just talking to me, and my lungs were terrible. And that was a really bad time. Just saying, son, what are you doing? Fucking, I can, are you allowed to swear on this podcast?
Go ahead.
You know, he says, what are you doing fucking about with them cars? Like, dad, do you know what? I love it. It's my business. I love it. He says, well, it's like this. You know, he says, I'm looking to retire soon. Do you know? If you want, I'll speak to your brother. I know you like this business. I said, yeah, I do like this business.
Yeah.
He says, I'll speak to your brother. I'll work out how much it'll cost for my share, and you can buy your way into this business, right? And I was like, right, okay. And Matthew, I shit you not again. I made the decision overnight. I just said, right.
So wild.
Yep. Speak to William. See how it goes. And I'm thinking, like, me and my brother, as much as we get on the very best, back then, you know, it was very much, he's 10 years older than me, I'm younger. You know, like, you butt heads a wee bit.
It's difficult when you're young. It definitely is.
That wouldn't have been an easy conversation my dad had to have with him. But, sure. Yeah, so he had the conversation, and to cut a long story short, we worked out terms and all the rest of it. And let's just say he wasn't hard on me, right? So, I went into the men's wear, started the men's wear business then in April 2011, and then worked in tandem with him and dad over the next sort of 2 years until then it became, me and my brother went out on our own and changed to Suter Brothers.
Fantastic.
But, hold on.
Is your dad still living?
Dad's still, he's not well. No, hasn't been well for the last sort of 15 years, Matthew. Okay. And he really just, the last sort of 6 or 7, he was struggling every day at work.
It
was time. And, you know, the business needed the two of us, really. Like, you know, because we're such a personal brand, you know, it was wise for me to come into that business at that point in time for the family, you know. And the fact that I was doing it, because, you know, I seen so much potential with it.
Mm-hmm.
The wee business was, we're just came out of the 08 crash, you know, and we're starting to get back in. I know, it was terrible.
Yeah, everyone loves to buy expensive suits after the biggest economic crash, don't they?
But we traded okay. We changed our model and stuff back then and went, you know, kind of, we actually got a wee bit more expensive, believe it or not, but it all worked out.
Yep.
So we're getting back out of the 08 crash, and the business is starting to, you know, it wasn't flying, but I'm looking, going, here, I could do something with this.
Mm-hmm.
I say, my lungs are crap, I'm going to get married to Nicola, was that year. Do you know, I could have a go at this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not that I wasn't disenfranchised with cars. I was just working long hours. Mm. It was killing me.
Yeah.
Literally, it was killing me. The doctors tell me, Chris, you're going to die by the time you're 40. Because we keep telling you to wear a mask and you won't wear a fucking mask.
Yeah.
I'm like, right, okay. So, it was the right time. So, again, it's just serendipitous how it all happened.
Mm-hmm.
But then, it took a couple of years then, Matthew, once my feet were under the table. And, like, I did go straight in as junior partner with the three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Or, sorry, with the two of them. And obviously, I'm coming with all these ideas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
My dad and my brother just going, Chris, this shop isn't broke. Stop trying to fix it.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Just sell suits and go home.
Yeah.
I'm going, fuck. I'm starting, you know, kind of twiddling, you know, getting itchy fingers going, have I made the right choice here? Because back in the SQ days, I was my own guy. It was just me and Quinn. We had a ball.
If you wanted to throw a triple turbo on, you could.
That's it. If I wanted to get in the car and drive out to Donegal and do donuts in a car park for breakfast, I could do that. Whereas now, I'm a wee bit curtailed. I'm in a family enterprise.
Yeah.
There's two other partners that are senior above me. I have to respect them.
Yes.
I'm on their pitch.
Yeah.
So it took me a while to really just get my feet on the table. So what happened was, I'm thinking, how am I going to change this business for the better? And I seen then the industry was guiding itself more towards bespoke tailoring and a made-to-measure where you can come and pick your fabric and your lining and make the stuff from scratch, okay? And that was kind of back to like where we used to be years and years and years ago. So
mafia movie stuff.
Yeah, it's what I kind of started at them behind their back. I kind of opened up an account with a workshop and kind of got this whole thing. Yeah, and then got this whole thing. And then I kind of just like brought them, right, guys, just letting you know, I'm going to start doing made-to-measure. I'm going to get back into this here. We're going to make Suter Brothers the place to be. It was Suter Menswear.
We're going to make
Suter Menswear the place to be for bespoke tailoring in Belfast. The guy's like, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. I was like, what do you mean it's not going to work? It's just not going to work. But look, thankfully, Matthew, they said, right, on you go, do what you want.
Yeah.
And to cut a long story short, Matthew, that very quickly became almost a third to maybe even approaching slightly higher than that of our annual turnover within about 2 years.
That's incredible.
It grew the business. So we kept our original trade, if you think of it, and added a third. And in fact, by year three, we had doubled turnover just by bringing that in. So by year, I was in there 2011. By 2016, the turnover figure from 2011 to 2016 was double.
Wow.
Yeah, in a very short space of time. And we're talking about, what I'm so proud of is, Matthew, I'm talking about a well-established family business that wasn't broke and need fixed.
Yeah.
Very, actually quite difficult to grow that, you know? And I had to kind of think outside the box and start bringing certain other ideas to the table. But around then 2015 started the whole social media culture. That's when it started to really take off, Matthew. And the whole influencer thing.
Sure.
But back then, influencers weren't what they were now. No. Influencers were celebrities, you know, old school influencers. Yeah. And I started dressing all the boxers and all the footballers and rugby players. And,
and that's so kind of where that came from. On that aspect of your business, like in some ways, and excuse me for projecting onto you, it's not particularly unlike podcasting. Because with a podcast, once you get a big name, it's easier to get another big name.
Yeah.
And then if you have a few big names, then you can approach people or they approach you. And it, you know, it raises the whole value of your brand.
It's brand equity, 100%.
And not everyone will come into you and buy a £5,000 suit.
Yeah.
But maybe they'll see someone wearing a £5,000 or £10,000 suit from you and they'll be like, actually, I'm going to go get my wedding suit there. And they'll spend £1,000 or they'll spend £500 or they'll spend whatever.
You hit it nail on the head. So once, actually, I'll attribute that the floodgates open. Michael Conlon had just won the 2015 World Amateur Boxing Championship. Like first Irish guy ever to do that, right? And that was pretty huge. And he needed a dress for RTE. And it was a friend of mine, Eamon McGill, gave me a ring. Says, Eamon, or says, Chris, Michael's looking dressed up, you know. And he doesn't know much about clothes, but he wants to be a snappy dresser. You know, would you look after him? I was like, absolutely, send him in. So he wants to put Michael Conlon in and put him on RTE.
So was he the domino?
He was the domino.
Interesting.
Then he was the first domino, but that domino then bumped into Carl Frampton. And then once Carl Frampton came in, which was like 3 weeks later, once Frampton was in,
That's where it
all came from.
Wow.
Because back then, which when Carl was on his, he was at his peak.
Sure.
Back then, and all of a sudden, every couple of weeks, he was in my shop getting a new suit.
Love that.
It was gold dust. And Carl and I became real good mates, as Michael become real good mates out of it. Because like that's one thing, Matthew, that I've been kind of really good at in my whole life, as I mentioned earlier, which is cottaging friendships and, you know, person-to-person people skills. I buy into people and let them buy into me.
Yeah.
And you create a relationship. So it's not about a transaction.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes a platonic relationship with them.
So it's hard because like so much of the soft skills are a wee bit of a dark art and you do so much charismatically speaking, that you're probably not even fully aware that you do. You know, things, the way you repeat things back to people, the way you're nodding your head right now, like things that naturally make people more open to you. If you were to take a step back and try to look, how do you build a relationship with some of these customers whenever really all you're doing is selling them a suit? On paper, they're there to buy something from you. I know they're not.
Yes.
But how do you extend that relationship beyond the shop walls?
I don't know whether it's just how I just approach everyone like they're the same, Matthew. And that's one thing that Carl really found with me, whereas because he was Carl Frampton back then, people treated him like Carl Frampton. I treated him like Carl. And that's the difference.
That's nice.
You know, the minute he walked in through the shop, I obviously knew all about him. He knew a bit about me. And it was just, hand out, Carl, what about you? You know, how are you doing? Well, how's Christine doing? How's the kids? You know, I'd never even met Christine or the kids. Do you know what I mean? And it's just literally that, shoulders down, break down, how you doing? And all of a sudden he was like, oh, yeah, it's all good, Chris. And we just then hit it off. And you're right, Matthew. It's an interpersonal skill that due to phones and social media and stuff and chat rooms and all this, that I hope that the younger generation aren't losing. You can put me into a room with 1,000 people and I will walk out with 999 of them being my friends. One person will hate me.
Oh, naturally.
Do you know what I mean?
Naturally.
You can't be everybody's friend. There'll be one guy that thinks that dresser is a dick. But you know what I mean? 999 of them, I will walk out with either their telephone number and or their, do you know what I mean? Their neighbors or their Insta handle or something like that. And really, really... just really, really make good friends. Sorry, my brother's ringing there. He's put me off now here. I'm just wondering if something went wrong.
I know, it's like Chris, so, please.
It's like, here, if it rings again, we know something's really wrong. So it's just, it's that kind of interpersonal skill that, like, I've been like this, Matthew, since I was a kid, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, actually worried. My wee Ava, my daughter, Ava's actually a very personable child. Yeah. And I have watched her dynamic with other kids mm-hmm. at play parks and stuff. It's actually quite daunting watching it because the amount of kids that shun her mm-hmm. because of it, because she's very frustrated like me. She's very mm-hmm. forward. She's like, hi, I'm Ava. Here, mm-hmm. can I play with you? And most of them just go, no, you're a weirdo. Bugger off.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm just wondering. I must actually ask Mum and Dad,
That happen to you?
Did that happen to me?
Like, what's changed? Like, has society changed?
Mm.
Or is it just that's what's always happened to people like that when they're young? It's a good question because, you know, like you know, you can hop on a soapbox and we can beat the dead drum talking all about, like, the challenges young people face with social media and stuff. But, you know, you do see it.
Yeah.
You see that people are less comfortable with that face-to-face, person-to-person interaction. And it's viewed as conflict.
Yeah.
You know, like the way you described Ava going into the park there, it's like a threat.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you coming towards me?
Yeah,
you know,
it's
like a fear-based response people have.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, what it would have been like 50 years ago where everyone's very open, very trusting of each other.
Yeah.
But now it's like, why are you coming into my bubble?
Totally.
You know?
And like, it's honestly, Matthew, there's been days where Nicola and I, whenever, particularly when I was a kid, and she'd go into Funky Monkeys or whatever and run up the trampoline and the kids just literally push her away, like put their hand on her face and push her away and then she'd just turn around and come over to us with her head, not crying, just with her head down.
Really tough.
Oh,
that dejection
nearly make me cry. Just
100%.
Like, literally, I remember me and Nicola both. We had to walk out of one place. I think it was Funky Monkeys, and literally bursting into tears. But
so
the both of us,
sad.
Just thinking that is so sad.
Yeah.
Do you know? But look, you kind of just have to take a deep breath and be all out of them. And look, they're only kids. They're only kids.
Yeah, and look, you
but
know,
we haven't changed her. We've kept it the same. Yeah. You know, we've tried to keep her and help her through that.
And for Ava, should be the most unbelievable salesperson on the planet. Because that resilience. You know what I mean?
I know. I just hope now, going forward, see Matthew, going back to the whole generational thing, I just hope that people become, you know, younger kids become more, less reliant on their phones. Because, like, I'm sure you've noticed this too. You drive down any main road and you look at a bus stop and the kids, every one of them, nobody's talking to anybody. And they're just on the phones.
I know.
On the phones. And, like, you know, if you've got an Ava, might like sitting there trying to talk to you and you just want to play on your phone, you know, she's, you know, I hope she doesn't end up getting bullied out of the whole thing, you know, I'm becoming the weirdo that wants to talk.
Yeah.
But
what's your relationship like with your phone? How do you manage that?
Yeah.
Because it's something that all of us constantly need to manage.
You're an Android. I'm an Android.
Yeah.
We're all Androids nowadays, 100%. Let's be honest.
Yep.
And honestly, Matthew, it's like a part of my body, and if I leave it behind, it's a disaster.
Look, let's be honest, it's an extension of our brain.
Totally.
Like, it is literally, totally. We outsource parts of our brain to this handheld device.
100%.
Yeah.
To be fair, I probably am still on it too much, Matthew, but I enjoy a good relationship with it. So
cool.
I am not a flicker. And what I mean by that is I am not wasting my time flicking through Instagram and just not doing anything. I am generally doing something constructive with it because I've got that many things going on. I would flip my emails. I'd probably get between 30, 40 different emails for different business all day, every day. And by the time you read them and then reply to them, you have another one back and then you have 80 and then you've 120. You know, it's like it goes exponential. You wake up in the morning with 40 and by the time like you go to bed, you have 120.
Yeah.
Plus all the Instagram stuff. Like, again, I do try to be super positive and be inspirational for people and give people a
lot of
laugh.
DMs coming, a lot of people saying thank you, a lot of people asking for advice. And
I reply to everyone.
Yeah.
You know, everyone, no matter who they are. I don't, in fact, it doesn't even matter who they are.
Yeah.
I just reply to everyone. Yeah. Even if it's just a heart or a thank you or a how you doing or if somebody's trying to engage in a conversation, I will engage in that conversation.
Where, and this is not something you probably had to think about yet, where will you draw the line? Because it is exponential. You know, let's say in like the trend in your life is you're going to gain more influence, you're going to gain more business, you're going to gain more connections. There will come a point where, in theory, you could spend 24 hours a day getting back to people.
You could. Do you know what, Matthew? You're so right. Yeah. I honestly don't have the answer to that and we'll try and work it out. But I know what you mean.
Because, you know, like if you take someone, I don't know, who's someone that you respect that's like massive, like in the online sort of space?
Somebody that I would talk to kind of regularly?
No, so someone who's like really, really famous that you just like really appreciate. Like someone like Gary Vee or someone.
Oh, I like that. Yes, I know what you mean. Callum Best.
Okay.
Friend of mine, yeah.
So Callum Best, like
900K, you know what I mean? So easy.
It's not possible. It's not possible for Callum to get back to everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I believe you will be in that place someday. And it's a question I've always wondered is, How do you decide? What's your policy? Do you just not do anybody? Do you have a team?
Talking about it, it's actually quite scary.
It's really scary.
Because I pride myself on getting back to everybody.
Of course you do.
And that's just me as a person. It's like when somebody's in my shop or whatever, I will make sure that that person will have at least been said hello to. Nobody comes into the shop without having said, are you okay? Yes. And, you know, a bit of an interaction, which I carry to all my business.
But this is the thing, like, and this is why society is in a weird sort of space, is because you doing that in person, in real life, with people in front of you, makes perfect sense.
Yes.
But if you multiply that with the digital tools we have, it's not sustainable. But it will pain you greatly.
It will.
The day that you leave someone on red.
What I need to get then is either a bot or a personal assistant.
A Chris Suter
that
bot.
That can write like me, and just put a wee CS at the end of it, you know what I mean? So like, oh, for me to come back to me. You know, one of those like messages, but there needs to be some sort of AI in it so it can read what you're being asked and then attribute. That's probably actually what, here, Matthew, there's a job.
Business. There you go. Business. 50-50, that's
good. Yes, let's do it. So Instagram reply bot, you know what I mean, using AI. Look here, mate, I'm one of those guys again. Look, I'll deal with it when
comes, that's it, you know, if it comes. You don't need to deal with it,
you know. So but is you're right, Matthew, it's a scary thing,
because this is an interesting thing here, you know, like I think about this all the time. Like, we will have spent by the end of this, let's say, 90 minutes with each other, including a wee hello and goodbye at the end. That's it, 90 minutes. It's the only interaction we'll have. And thousands of people will engage with it.
Yeah.
So that 90 minutes will be multiplied out thousands of times.
That's amazing.
It's like having like thousands of cups of coffee with people that you've never met.
Yes.
That, I find that really strange.
Yes.
And it's hard to wrap your head around. And it's a wonderful, like, it's a wonderful aspect of technology.
Yes.
But it's also like, that is also a terrifying aspect
Matthew,
of technology.
You're so right. And I have felt that before listening to podcasts. That you've literally had, like, Joe Rogan is literally my podcast hero.
Like, you feel like your best mates with Joe.
Oh, see if I met Joe on the street. Ah, yeah, what about you, Joe? Sitting here.
Because it's that one-sided relationship where, like, you know everything about him or everything he's told about himself.
Yeah.
And you've hung out with him in the car. You've hung out with him whenever you're doing, like, stock. You've hung out with him whenever you're out for a run. And he doesn't know who you are.
Well, I used to, like, here, in a very small little Belfast scale, you know, I can be out for a run. All of a sudden, Chris, how you doing? I'm like, should I know who this is? How you doing? Yeah, I'm good. And it's always people that almost expect you to know who they are and stuff like that.
They're coming in with, say, like a 40% friendship.
Yeah.
And you're coming in with nothing.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
It is difficult.
It's hard to manage that.
It's hard to manage. But again, with the way I am as a person, Matthew, I never want anybody to feel uncomfortable to approach me.
Yeah.
So I try and mitigate that and try and break down the scenario and try and work it
out. If you treat everybody the same way that you treat Carl Frampton, you'll never have an issue.
Yeah.
You know, I had someone on the podcast recently and they said, like, they can't lie. Like, they literally can't because they've got a terrible memory.
Oh my goodness, right, okay.
You know, and their mom always says, you'll never lie because you'll be too easy to be caught out.
Yeah.
And it's a wee bit like that. If you treat everyone equally and fairly and friendly, you won't ever have an issue.
Yeah, I agree. And that whole thing, again, I was brought up that way, Matthew, just to treat everybody as I find them. And like, there's guys that I would be friendly with that maybe have a bit of a past. And you know what? You know, you can maybe Google their past and all the rest of it. But, I just treat them as I get them, and that's you know, it's difficult in ways. It's difficult in ways to deal with, because by the time you have so many people, well, he's this and she's that, she's the other, and like, I'm just, you're trying to put out fires all the time. So like, the guy's good with me, you know, he's a customer, man. He comes in, and he spends money, he's nice, and all the rest. And why'd you put him in your story? He's this. And I'm like, guys, honestly, see, if you like, just worry about yourself, worry about your own life. I worry about my life. Yeah. You worry about yours. Yeah. You know. Thanks for your concern.
I'll always thank
them for their concern. Right. But yeah, just treat everybody like, you know, everybody like you want, like you want to be treated.
It's cool.
You know, because again, Matthew, I go about life, I want to have a good life.
Yeah.
I want to smile all the time. Mm-hmm. You're not on, so just to say it, but again, on my on my Instagram, I have an absolute ball every day in life, no matter what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have shit days too, right?
Of course.
But like, everybody does. And things go wrong and I make mistakes every single day in life, right? Mm-hmm. But I make sure the majority of it is spent with a smile on my face, with trance music playing in the background, being nice to people, making people laugh, making people smile, going home to the wife and the kids, having good crack with them. And, you know, it's a really nice way to be.
Yeah.
And that then lends itself to being nice to others. Mm-hmm. And it starts with not judging people and not, you know, having a misconception of who and what those people are.
Yeah.
So anybody that comes into my life, you get treated exactly as you stand in front of me.
One final question before I kind of move into like just stock questions to land the plane. How do you prioritize time for your wife and your kids?
Yeah, very good question.
Because you're somebody who you have the opportunity to work 24/7. You, I assume, love your work based love on talking
it.
To you.
Yeah.
You get highly stimulated by it. It is really possible for you literally to never go home. So
yes,
is there ever a tension there where you're like, I have to dedicate this time, or I have to set a clear boundary, or are you more flexible with the way that you do it? Tell me, like, just approach that for me.
First things first, Matthew, and again, I don't even know if she'll ever listen to the podcast because she doesn't do podcasts. My wife, Nicola, the blade, she is just the blade. You don't want to get too close, you get chopped, right? So she is just the absolute... She is. I'm trying to think of a good. I was going to use the word dog's balls. That's not a nice way to describe my wife, is it? Nickling the dog's balls up. She is the glue that keeps everything together, Matthew. Mm. She is between her and my brother doing the menswear stuff. You know, that little team that I have around me allows me to do what I do and do so much of it.
Sure.
But yes, I could be out every single night of the week doing something, but I don't. I generally make sure I'm home most nights. I see the kids in the morning. I see them. Obviously, everybody has their work day.
Yeah.
But at the minute, we're currently running a coffee truck 7 days a week. So any days that I'm usually off the shop, I'm in the coffee truck.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it can be difficult. But the best way I can describe it is I do good quality time with the kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, a lot of people are with their families at night, but they're not, you know, they're maybe in a room watching football.
Yeah, they're doom scrolling.
Yes, or they're just flicking, you know, and the kids are in another room.
Yeah.
We are a very communal family, so we were usually in the same room together, you know, and there's always stuff going on.
Sure.
So it's really, really good family time and good quality time. And see, Nicola isn't hard on me, but my other stuff, like my MC gigs and my DJ and stuff, is generally done when the kids are going to bed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, I go out after I get the kids to bed, then I go out DJing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, I'm not talking about that yet.
I know.
Right. So, I can do that stuff whenever Nicola and my kids are sleeping. So, it's not actually impacting on our time together.
Do you get up early?
I get up at about 7. I used to get up earlier, but I get up about 7 most days. So alarm set for 6:30. Man, I wake up at 6:30 and then I doze until 7, maybe quarter past. And then the kids would come in and I see them. We cuddle every day.
That's really good.
We have a really close family that way.
That's cool.
You know, and Ava's daddy's girl, Lois is mommy's girl.
Perfect.
But we've got the dog and all the rest. And Sonia, we're a really good, loving family, you know.
I think that's important. And even just like the physical affection, I think is so important.
Class, I love
and
it.
And that's something that I think like, in recent history of Northern Ireland, I mean, like the last maybe 50 years, we probably haven't done a great job with.
Yes.
We're a wee bit awkward. Like, we're pretty bad dancers. We're not comfortable with our bodies. We're not comfortable giving each other hugs and kisses. And whereas, you know, I remember I used to live in Rwanda in East Africa. I remember walking down the street and this grown-ass man just grabbed me by the hand and walked with me down the street hand in hand. And I was what's happening? And they were like, no, like, this is, it's just a sign of love between friends. And I was like,
wow.
We don't do that back home.
Just do it, hold my hand.
But there's so much warmth and affection. Totally. And like, I like to see families over here who are instilling bits of that, you know.
Yeah, and we are. And like, we're huggers. I'm a huge hugger.
Yeah.
I will hug people and kiss people, even if I don't know them. It's going to be a wee bit weird and get me into trouble every now and again. But I love pouring out love, Matthew. I just love people being in love. Like, there was a guy tagging me in this video there last week, and it was a video of him proposing to his wife. And I'm sitting in the car, and the tears literally trickled because I'm so happy for him. And it was just beautiful.
Yeah.
And again, so what I did, I got that on Instagram because I want people to see that it's okay to cry.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to love people. It's okay to pour that out.
Yeah.
And like, people must watch my social media math and think I'm a flipping Fruit Loop. I swear to God. But I love that.
Yeah.
Because you know what I mean? Yeah. It's okay to love people and
to
be emotionally free that way. Me and the kids and the wife and Nicola and all, we're very much like that. But yeah, I do make sure that I spend enough time. Now, 100%, Matthew, I could spend more time. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, here, I see them, you know, 7 days a week, 24/7.
Sure.
Because I don't. I'm busy doing lots of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I make sure and spend lots of quality time when we go away together and we do lots. We've always got something. Yeah. We've always got something planned to look forward to, albeit a trip to We Are Vertigo or a trip up to Donegal or down to a hotel. There's always something to look forward to. And I think that's very important.
It is important.
Because we've always got something to aim at then. Yeah. So I'm going around. I'm going to work really hard this week because I know on Friday.
Yeah.
I'm taking the day off and I'm taking the kids to We Are Vertigo.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, and like, they're very happy kids. Matthew, myself and Nicola, we're good at taking a step back and having a look at our life and seeing where we are. Are we doing too much?
I think that's important.
You know, you got to be realistic with yourself too. And like, there has been times, Matthew, where I've maybe done a couple of weeks, I've maybe been out 3-4 nights a week DJing, mm-hmm. I've maybe got a load of MC gigs, I've been doing coffee, I've been working late in the shop, and like, there is the odd week where I would go 7 days, 7 nights and not see anybody.
Sure.
And then it's all of a sudden, Nicola would be like, Suit, she calls me Suiter, but Suiter, you're doing a bit much, aren't you? And I was like, what do you mean? It's like, last week you weren't home one night. It's like, shit, you're joking me, was it not?
Yeah.
And I look back through my diary and go, holy shit, I wasn't. Because I can get lost in it.
Of course, mate.
Do you know?
Course.
Like, I'm not perfect by any chance, by any stretch of imagination. And I'm like, going, oh, right enough. So I'm thinking, right, this week I need to plan myself better.
Yeah.
So it's just about being dynamic and moving and flowing with it, Matthew.
Yeah.
But I do seem to be, I get asked this all the time, particularly lately, how do I fit it all in? Mm-hmm. Because I can be up in Donegal 1 minute, and then I can be in Belfast in the afternoon, and then I can be in Portrush in the evening, and then I'm at home with my kids for 10 o'clock watching a movie, eating some popcorn.
Yeah.
All in one day.
Yeah.
And like, I don't really have an answer for it. Mm-hmm. I just seem to be able to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But there's 25 hours every day and 8 days in every week. So I just fit it in like everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just really enjoy it. And again, Matthew, most of this, I'm very selfish, right? Mm-hmm. And let me kind of elaborate on that. I think of myself as selflessly selfish. So for me to be the best person to everyone around me, I need to look after me first. So mm-hmm. everything I do, Matthew, is centered towards making me feel good about myself and put a smile on my face. Mm-hmm. But 99 times out of 100, it's me doing something else for someone else mm-hmm. that makes, and I get love reciprocated and vibes reciprocated from people and positivity mm-hmm. by what I do, which makes me feel good, but it's making them feel good too.
Yeah.
So I'm very selfish that way. So again, even with the family, I'll always do stuff that I know is good for me because it makes me a better dad, it makes me a better husband, it makes me a better family, a family member, it makes me a better business person. You know, that's one message, Matthew, that I try and get across to a lot of people, which is, you know, look after yourself. You know, my wife particularly, she's very, she'd be very much, but she puts everybody before herself.
Yes.
Like she's old school, you know. Like a proper old school mummy stroke housewife, even though she's super hot and yoga teacher and, you know, coffee fishnet, like she's gorgeous, like she's class, right? But she's very, in her ways, in her demeanor and in her, the way she approaches life, it's like literally kids before everything.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas I'm not like that.
Yeah.
But in a good way, because it can make me sound like a real flipping shit here. But, you know, I make sure and look after myself, and a lot of times I have to stop Nicola and say, Nicola, you need a rest.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You need to look after yourself. Go and do your own, go for a walk, go and do your own yoga class.
Yeah.
Look after yourself.
So, sorry, I pulled out the phone because I was looking something up.
Yes.
You are an egotistical utilitarian.
Yes, am I?
That is something I picked up from Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, flip.
And he describes this as, hang on, let me type.
An egotistical utilitarian. Yeah. Right, yeah, cool.
So let me see. Yeah. Scroll.
Somebody that uses that kind of egotistical nature for good. Is it where he tells me it's bad?
An egoist is someone who does whatever is best for them.
Yes.
A utilitarian is someone who does whatever is best for others. So in what you've just described, like, yes. Nicola would be a utilitarian.
Yes.
Always people first.
Yes.
He argues that you can be an egotistical utilitarian where...
This is Matthew McConaughey, hey?
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, like the proper, like... Oh, man, what a scene.
Oh, it's amazing.
Do you know that scene was not scripted?
No.
And do you know that he literally, the reason why he did that, he just wanted to screw with Leonardo DiCaprio.
No way.
And he literally rocked up. And
no way.
So rewatch that scene when you go home on YouTube, right? And you'll see Leo's face, like, looking at the team, being like, what's happening right now? And they all were wetting themselves.
I didn't know that.
Because Leo's the man. You know, he's the actor. Like, he is the dog's bollocks.
Yeah.
And McConaughey just thought, do you know what? Let's just mess with this guy. And they kept it in because I thought it was so funny.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's one thing, Matthew. I wish I could read. As in, I can't read, but I wish I could read books. Because I buy books but never read them.
Yeah.
I kind of just buy them to put them on Instagram and make it look like I read books. And then, you know, and then never read them. But I bought that, like, Red Green Lights or something.
Green Lights. That's by him. Yeah,
haven't read it.
Yeah,
but so an egotistical utilitarian.
Yeah, and his argument is that there are things in your life that by you being selfish, it's actually the most selfless thing that you can do.
There you are. Well, that's
so.
Brilliant.
For
that's,
example, like, I talk a lot about mental health in the podcast. You know, for someone who has a tendency towards the likes of depression,
yeah,
like, one of the most generous things I can do for my family is get up early and exercise.
Okay.
One of the most useful things I can do for my family is see a therapist.
Wow.
Those actions are selfish in nature because they take up resources, they take up time, it's me away from family, but actually it would be selfish for me not to do those things.
That's brilliant.
And that's what an egotistical utilitarian is. So I just gave you that because you can Google it and there's way more on it, but... I always like to find things that kind of help you. Oh, this is actually what I have been doing my whole life. I just didn't have like a framework for it.
And that's exactly where I am. Because again, I've been like that since I was yay high. I was always looking out for others, but making sure, like, you know, when I say looking out for others, how can I explain this? Like, I wouldn't, like if somebody had a knife through their hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't take the knife out and stick it in my own hand. Do you know what I mean?
Here, look,
I feel the same as you. You know what I mean? I would definitely have. That was not a great comparison.
I actually liked it. It made sense because I think a lot of like where utilitarians, because I know many of them, where they can get themselves into trouble is whenever they unnecessarily make themselves martyrs.
Yes.
Which is what you've just described.
Totally. And Nicola can be like that.
So someone's going through a really hard time.
Yeah.
And they will be there for that person. But they almost feel like they need to then, you know, go through a really hard time themselves. Yeah. Or there's this bit of like, oh, well, if everyone else is suffering, I must suffer.
Yeah.
And I think that then that's where that's not really selfless. That's stupid.
Yeah.
And because you're actually...
There needs to be a limit, a balance.
Because you're actually hurting people then. Because for you to contribute to your family and to society, you do need that baseline for yourself, you know. And it's the classic. And this networking events have you been to in the entrepreneurial community that have used the example of the masks dropping down on the airplane and you have to put your own mask on first?
Yes.
But there's a lot of truth to it.
Yeah, makes total sense. Like Nicola, I work with Nicola kind of very lightly and loosely because she can be very stubborn. Yes, Nicola, you can. do you know what I mean? But yeah, I always make sure that she tries to take time for herself. Yeah. She would be a total utilitarian. Yeah.
So give me bullet points.
Yeah.
What are the things that are selfish for you that keep you the best version of yourself?
Sleep.
Right.
Six hours every night at least. Yeah, six and a half hours.
Beautiful.
Every night, apart from when I'm DJing, sometimes when I get three.
Do you do anything to help facilitate the quality of your sleep?
Matthew, yes. And like this is going to sound so profound.
I love it.
So basically simple.
I love it.
I make sure that I live every single day to the absolute
100. That was not what I was expecting. I thought it was going to be like, yeah, take magnesium and don't look at my phone for half an hour.
This is so basically simple. And I said this to someone the other day and they're like, oh yeah. I make sure I give my life 101% every single day.
Yeah.
So see the minute I go to bed,
yeah.
I make sure that I have every email replied to, every person replied to on the phone.
Yeah.
I make sure I've given my wife and two kids a kiss.
Yeah.
I make sure I have been as good a human being as I can be to everyone that day. I make sure I've walked every little lady across the street and pressed the flipping green light for them. And honestly, Matthew, I do this and people look at me, is it not exhausting? It is not exhausting. Because again, it makes me feel great.
Yeah.
And whenever I hit the pillow at night, I have had the best day.
Yeah, so
every single day, Matthew.
You're like a kid.
And I go to sleep. And sleep like a baby.
Nice.
Whereas some other people, they'll maybe, you know, they've been nasty to someone, all of a sudden that'll be manifesting inside. Well, what does he think of me? What does she think of me? And or they maybe haven't done, oh, flip, did I do that in work? Oh, I should have done this. And all of a sudden you're going to bed at night and your wee mind's working overload on what you haven't done today. I go to sleep at night knowing I have done everything I needed to do.
Yeah.
You know, however, there's a caveat. Right? There is a caveat. I always leave one thing to do the next day.
Nice.
So if I've 10 things that I need to
get out of bed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly, Matthew.
Yeah.
If I've 10 things to do that day, I will do 9 of them to the 101%.
Love that.
And I will always leave one. No matter what, it might just be something meaningless, something silly, right? It could be something huge. And I will always leave something for the next day. So see, whenever I wake up at 6 o'clock or 6:30 in the morning, whatever it is, 6:30, and I'm in that little half hour dream state, I'm already manifesting about how I'm going to go about my day. And the first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to do that thing I meant to do yesterday. And that starts my day off.
Do you know what? That is like way more profound than you may give yourself credit for. I'll give you the only other example I've heard of that in my life. Ernest Hemingway, like the big writer, fancy dude, one of his things that he would do is he would never end the writing day on a full stop. He would stop mid-sentence.
Yes.
So he could come back the next day.
See?
And no matter how he felt,
yes,
he would could always finish that sentence.
He could finish
and finishing that sentence, then next thing you know, oh, here's another sentence and another one, another one, another one.
Steal
one.
That.
Please steal
oh,
it.
Oh, I'm stealing that. That's great. I'll give you credit.
It's not mine. It's his. It's Hemingway's.
Via Matthew from the Best of Belfast. Yeah, that. But that's essentially
because you know, like if you show up the next day at a blank page, terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, as someone who writes, it's that is a scary place to be. If you show up and you just have to add in four more words, you already know we're going to go there.
You're away.
It's amazing what it does to your mind.
Well, again, I put that up. I do, like, again, on my Instagram, I put up, like, wee motivational quotes every day that I've made up. And I put that up that always leaves something for tomorrow.
Mm.
And the amount of people that came back, I'm like, maybe not 100, but, like, you know, 10 or 20 people going, Chris, no, I don't believe that. I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get done in your day what you set out to do.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. And I'm like, I'm just here. I'm just saying, this is what works for me.
Yeah.
Quite happily to agree with that works with you, or to accept and respect that that works for you, that you need to get everything done. But then you wake up in the morning almost, you know, I have done it numerous times where I have got everything done, and then wake up in the morning going, you're almost kind of anxious about what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I immediately know how my day is going to start off.
Yeah.
And by the time I start doing number 10 from yesterday, number 1 to 9 has already started to pan itself out from the day, you know, from that current day. Yeah. And I just get on with it.
Okay, so sleep.
Yeah.
Leaving something to do. Anything else, like, major? Like, if there's nothing else, like, don't just give me something for the sake of it, you know what I mean? Anything else that you're like, this is something that's I need to, like, that's kind of selfish, but it keeps me good.
Yeah, well, downtime too. So even
how,
like,
does suitor downtime
look like? Downtime will be like that hour when you get into bed. We get into bed about maybe sort of 10, half 10, and it's just literally, I'll chill.
Nice.
So I'll chill that bit just before, unless I'm DJing. I'll chill that bit, right? And again, it usually was be me just probably just answering people online or something like that. Or if it's just putting on my favorite TV. Like, I don't watch TV, but I do watch Gold Rush. And I do watch, like, Blaze. You know that Blaze TV channel?
Yeah.
I love nothing more than a wee bit of Pawn Stars or a wee bit of Storage Wars. You know, real easy to watch.
Yeah,
stuff you don't need to think about.
Yeah.
And also, I love walking too, Matthew. So I love getting out for a bit of a dander, podcast on. But there's one, right, so this is going to sound so funny. So if I'm not doing that, right, the biggest way I chill out and relax and I get myself back to where I need to be is through music.
Mm.
And it's either in the car or it's on my PC with, prepping a set, or it's on my decks and trance music, Matthew.
Yeah.
It actually, the more, because this is a difficult question you've asked me to, and I'm not prepped for it, right? But as I'm thinking, forget about the sleep, forget about the 1 hour, forget about the 1 hour chilling before bed. The number one answer to your question is my music.
Nice.
I can transport myself and my head into a completely different stratosphere of universalness with music. I get lost in my music. And it's not that it's not flipping Beethoven's 12th Symphony and all that kind of stuff, it's 12 minutes long and it's it's trance music, mate.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's so cool.
I mean, it gives me goosebumps every time I listen to it. And I can actually turn that on and off. Say I've made a mistake in work.
Yeah.
Say a customer's on his way in to pick up a suit and I haven't got it tailored. Do you know what I mean? That can happen.
Sure.
Again, that can happen quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and the customer literally lights into me and gives me flipping shit and I'm this and I'm that. And I need to wear that. You know, because some customers are like that. Most of them are lovely. But get the odd one that literally wants to tear strips off just because it's their place that day. Or it's Chris' suit. I'm going to rip strips off him. I can just go out the back. You know what I mean? The blood's kind of going boiling a wee bit and you've been really nice and kind to them and I just click on, put the AirPods in and I just put on trance music and Matthew, my entire, it's like going to Donegal. Shoulders drop and the eyes just go, oh my God, this is amazing.
Crossing the border.
You imagine, now you imagine me playing trance music in my smart car with the roof down, crossing the border in the Donegal. Yeah.
Next level
happiness. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And it's something so simple, Matthew. But it resonates with me. It hits those. It allows me to release those endorphins and the serotonin and the dopamine. I have become my own little drug factory. Because number one, I don't drink alcohol much. Like, I take the odd beer. I have never touched a drug in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't smoke. I don't do any of that sort of stuff.
You've got a pretty strong dopamine system then.
I know. I've found my way to get the goosebumps.
It's good.
And it's through, I can turn it on and off through music. Do you know what, Matthew? The more we have this conversation, because you learn. See, when you do these podcasts, you learn about yourself.
I don't usually say this to people while we're on air, but the closest thing to podcasting is therapy.
Yeah,
it's the only other thing that's like it. Because look at this room, okay?
Yeah,
glass window.
Yeah.
Quiet room, Nobody else.
Yeah.
Just you and me.
Just you and me talking.
And it's mainly one person listening.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's a really... I love being a guest.
It is very therapeutic.
I love being a guest.
Yeah.
Like, basically anyone who asks me to go on their podcast, even if, to be honest, maybe the podcast is very small or... I always go on it because it literally makes me a better person, makes me a better communicator, helps me learn things about myself.
Yes.
So I thoroughly enjoy it.
Well, mate, that's you here. That's you're getting this out of me here. Yeah. I'm working with you here.
Yeah.
And it's just it's something that I've been in the music for a long, long time, Matthew. But here, I got into DJing 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years ago now.
I didn't realize it was a recent thing, mate, for you.
Oh, again, it was back in those days whenever I was just smashing goals left, right, and center.
Hilarious,
that was back when I wanted to be a DJ, so I just became a DJ. Do you know what I mean? Wanted to be a boxing MC, so just became a boxing MC. And so I was doing my inspirational Instagrammy videos every morning, get up, get out, get at it. And I was, you know, walking and going to the gym and overlaying it with this beautiful kind of uplifting trance music. And people started asking me for playlists.
Mate, this is crazy. Oh. So literally before I was going to like wrap this interview up, I was going to ask you, do you have a playlist you can share with our listeners?
Oh, I've got a whole SoundCloud devoted to me, to DJ Chris Souter.
Brilliant, mate.
Man, you can go on, you can play all my sets, right? And hopefully anybody that's listened to it and hasn't got into it can actually... almost, maybe not enjoy it, but appreciate what it does. Because the music that I play, Matthew, okay, it's trance music. It's 130 to 140 BPM. It's quite up-tempo. But it's mainly the stuff that I like and I play and I record is generally recorded in a major tone. Okay, so think back to musicality.
Yeah.
So minor tone's quite, you know, demure and depressing. Major tone's quite uplifting and cheery and positive.
Yeah.
That fits with my demeanor and fits with what goes on in here, right? So anytime I'm feeling down or feeling like the world's getting on top of me or the pressure's starting to mount, I just have to either get into the car, put the AirPods in, go out for a walk, trance music, mate.
Nice.
And all that dopamine and, say, serotonin and all that stuff, just I just get filled with joy.
Yeah.
And, like, honestly, Matthew, it's dead funny. There used to be a guy that walked up and down the Sydney bypass. This is well before your time. You're only young, right? Up and down the Sydney bypass, and God love me, he had issues, right?
Sure.
He was always off his head in drugs.
Yeah,
and he used to walk with his hand in the air as if he was unscrewing a light bulb. And he was famous, right? You could nearly see him like nearly every day on the way home.
You're going home to
the bypass. He's up there just walking up and down the Sydney bypass. You know, flipping blitzed on whenever he's at blitzed on. You know what I mean? And unscrewing this light bulb. Well, I've had people come up to me and go, I've seen you walking down the greenway with your hand on there. I literally get lost and like you're just, you know, the music's just like, yes. And I'm walking down the greenway in the morning, you know, with the sun blasting with my hand in the air, just with this beautiful uplifting trance music flying through my head, releasing all these flipping lovely chemicals in your body, just going, guys, if only I could get this through to more people, if only more people could appreciate this. Like, this is life, mate. This is being a human. This is what the human body's meant to feel. Mm-hmm. It's just we've been suppressed to not feel it for so long. So do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And people almost get scared of feeling good. And so another thing that I kind of, if I'm doing a wee bit of mentoring with people, that I say, see if you find something you like doing, Matthew, do it over and over and over and over again. If I find a new track, right, a new trance track that's out this week and I like it, I will play it on repeat time after time and my kids crack up and Nicola cracks up after time after time after time and I'll just keep doing it because I find stuff that I like doing and I just keep flipping doing it.
Yeah.
And that's part of what keeps my whole positive attitude and cheery outlook on the world and it's my shield too, Matthew. You know, it's a cloak. Number one, it's a cloak, but it's also a shield.
Yeah.
I can hide behind it, but I can also fight stuff off with
it. So true.
Yeah. And again, I'm just maybe just one of those lucky ones that's found what makes them tick.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's another thing, again, when I'm doing a wee bit of mentoring, that you need to find what makes you tick, you know. And I might have just been lucky to find it before I'm 40. You know, it might take you to your 65 to find it.
Yeah.
Don't try and rush it. Don't get annoyed if you haven't found it. Keep looking for it.
Yeah.
But enjoy the journey. I just happen to be one of the lucky ones that found it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people it's food. Some people it's holidays. Some people it's
love.
Some, you know, it's all that sort of stuff. Mine, it's flipping trance music, mate.
Brilliant, mate. Love that. I love how we ended up there in a strange, wonderful way.
So,
you know?
SoundCloud, guys. Anybody listening, go on the SoundCloud, type in DJ Chris Suter, play. All my sets are called Positive People. Yeah. So, Positive People Volume 1, right up. I think I'm on 14 or 15 now. And it's now then progressed in Matty. I now DJ at local at clubs. I've DJed at events, big festivals. I DJed last week at a big outdoor festival called Shorefest. I then hosted the gig. I met loads of my heroes. You know, it's became now another little part of my life that I absolutely enjoy.
Class,
and you get paid, and you get paid for it. Again, passion before profit, but it's nice to get a wee check at the end of it.
Oh, mate, 100%.
Isn't it?
It helps everything move around, doesn't it?
It's the blood supply. Like, it keeps it going. But I don't do it for the money. But again, whenever I started out doing the DJ, and, you know, I was going to say, I'll just do it for free, you know. Mm-hmm. And but the DJ community frown upon that because it's very it dilutes.
Well, you undercut the market.
Yes, it dilutes what they do. Yeah. You know what I mean? And there is a talent to it. And, you know, I'm currently honing it. I like to think I'm pretty good at it. But, you know, it's a consistent journey. And I don't want to, I'm one of those guys who hate offending anybody.
Sure.
So, yep, I'll charge for it. You know, they're begging me to charge. Okay. I'll take money for it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, mate, fork in the road.
Go.
Stock questions.
Yes.
Or wrap up because it's.
Stock questions. I like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ready to go?
Go.
Okay, let me just check one wee thing. This guy says, what's the crack? Are you around now? Should there be there by 5:30? I'm going to say ring doorbell. Ring doorbell in podcast.
Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-
Most challenging moments so far.
In life or what?
In life.
In life, most challenging moments so far in life. Watching my wife give birth to Ava.
Yeah.
Nightmare.
Why specifically Ava? Or was it the same with the other kids?
Oh,
or?
No, I'll tell you exactly why. Nicola went 18 hours, really, really tough labour.
Oh, bless her.
Nicola starting to go on us, baby starting to go on us, emergency section. Nicola died on the operating table.
Oh, my goodness.
Fuck me.
Chris Sooner.
Oh, honestly, I'm starting to sweat thinking about it. Thank the Lord we had a hotshot student anaesthetist. He's dead calm. I'm watching Nicola's blood supply, our blood BPM go beep, beep, beep. And I'm going, what's going on? And they're working at her, taking Ava out in emergency section. Ava's blood, or what do you call, heartbeat had practically dropped off to nothing too.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I'm just watching my entire life go in front of me here.
Yeah.
And I'm just being told to be calm. The guy's saying, Chris, just be calm. I'm going, okay, be calm. And he just turned around. He flipping, I don't know what he'd done, but he got a wee syringe of stuff. And he said, it's all right. And he just put it back in. And he squeezed it into her. And all of a sudden, boom, back she came.
Wow.
Awful. Unbelievable, but awful. So definitely to this day, the most difficult flipping thing I've ever gone over. Because you're so helpless, Matthew.
Yeah.
It's that feeling of utter helplessness.
Yeah.
I could do nothing.
Not one thing.
Just a big, hopefully back then about 12 and a half stone, but maybe 13 stone dollop of human existence that could do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And with me being a doer, I am that sort of person. I'll push everybody out of the way to do everything. Do you know what I mean? That was honestly, it was one of the worst feelings of my entire life. And it's meant to be one of, you know, you're getting into that whole experience thinking it's going to be the most happiest.
Yeah, you've got big expectations.
Baby and,
yeah,
gonna, yeah. And I was literally just watching the entire world crumble before me. So, yeah, but look, all's well that ended well. Ava's come out and she was okay. Nicola, yeah, she was fine. It was a bit of a hard journey after that. But see, whenever we brought Ava home, like a couple of days later, and literally brought her into, then we lived in the apartment of Donald, and we set the baby, and we just literally set the baby in the living room, and just went out into the hall, and just burst into tears. Somebody can start crying now.
Mm-hmm.
It was awful.
Yeah.
But it also created and taught us a lot of resilience.
Mm-hmm.
It gave us a lot of trust and faith in our national health system. Because
mm-hmm.
let me tell you, we were the hospital was really busy at that time. We were on a full student team.
Wow.
Student consultant, our student doctor, student surgeon, student anaesthetist. Like they told us this on the way in. So guys, we're under pressure. You're with the student team. And I'm going, I'm what? All right, okay. I'm going, okay. So he says, okay, they're good. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I'm going, okay.
Yeah.
So, man, honestly, that's the toughest. That was shit. Like,
I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, and again, that's me. That's like, yeah. Lois, on the other hand, she was a gift. She was elective section. You went in at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Look at that.
You got your socks on, and you know what I mean. Like Nicola would be like, we've got a toaster. And then she got her epidural, and then she was wheeled in, and all of a sudden wheeled back out. There's your baby. There's your wife. And you go, oh, shit, it's great. You go, oh, Lois is super.
And yeah, the second time round was just brilliant. It was an exceptional experience. Oh, this is cool. This is, you remember the last time? No, I don't want to think about it.
Brilliant.
So yeah, that was, yeah, that's the most difficult part of my life so far. Like, but again, the journey, again, I'm not going into too much, Matthew, but the journey to even get to Ava, like me and Nicola were trying for years.
Oh, really?
Years upon years, yeah. And we were signed up for like ICSI, like an IVF type thing.
Yeah,
then Nicola fell pregnant once we got the letter. So it was all like, you know, we were all so psyched up. We're going to have a baby.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying for so long. Yeah. And oh my goodness. It was like, and then all of a sudden I'm just watching it all turn to shit. Going, oh my God, this is terrible. But look, we got through it.
Crazy.
And you know what I mean? It was just... There was a point in that time where I was starting to doubt my belief in things. Because again, I was even quite positive. I'm going, holy shit, what's going on here? But that was only a short period of time and it got better and we got through it.
Cool,
and
mate.
It's made us more resilient people nowadays. Totally. So.
And more appreciative.
And more, 100%, Matthew.
Know, whenever you feel like, you know, flinging stuff at each other, you just go back to that moment. You're like, no, I am still glad you exist.
Yes, totally. Yes, remember that time I watched you die? You know, so like, yeah, Nicola and I have a great bond that way. Today, it's all I'm doing, just rubbing her hand, going, "Oh my god!" And flip her lips and all blue. And anyway, it's it's just one of those harrowing, horrible experiences. But it comes to many, Matthew. And you know, at the end of it, I'm trying to throw a positive light on it. You know, it all worked out well. Mm-hmm. And there's you got to think of it. There's many people out there that doesn't work out well.
That's true.
And we just
feel
so lucky that it did. You know?
So flip side then, most successful moment.
Again, this is either life or
this is everything, mate.
This is everything, right? Most successful moment. Flip, there could be many, Matthew. I'm trying to let me put down one for business, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then one for kind of home life and stuff, because I need to get all soppy on it and give Nicola some props again. But business life was winning Business Person of the Year 2017.
Nice.
So again, that there was a difficult time period in the shop where again, I was trying to do my own little thing with it, and I was, you know, was growing and things were going great. But I didn't fully believe that my brother nor my dad had fully appreciated what I was doing and what we were achieving.
Mm-hmm.
And then that night, I was shortlisted for Business Person of the Year 2015, lost. 2016, lost.
Hey,
and I went again.
Ahead.
I am the perennial trier,
go
Matthew.
Ahead.
See if you tell me it's not going to happen or I lose, I'll do it again.
Yeah.
I'll do it again. So I went for it the third time. And the third year, I was up against all these amazing people.
Yeah.
But I knew I had gave, number one, my business, but number two, the city, my all. I was the chairman of the Business Improvement District. So I'd brought like this £1 million self-funded investment to the city. I had done so much. I was in so many different boards and Belfast City Centre Management, Belfast Chamber. I was out there moving and shaking. I was running my business and out there moving and shaking and like running the city in many ways too, mm-hmm. and really trying to develop Belfast. So because when I lost in 2015, I wasn't too sad because I lost to Sandra Corkin. she's a great girl. She's Oasis Travel. The next time around, I lost to Michael Stewart, who's a good friend of mine. And see, when I lost second time, I says, I'm going to make sure, it's the third time around, I am going to, see, this year, I'm going to do more than anyone. I'm not even just going to do more than anyone. I'm going to do twice as much as everyone.
Yeah.
So I went out of my way to get myself into as many positions, as many boards, as many conferences, as many interviews. I've done all my TV stuff. I became the face of retail, you know, with regards to the media in that year, and literally I gave the judges no choice. Whenever the judges were asked, I just kind of said, guys, at a thing printed out, says, guys, have a look at that.
Yeah.
That's what I've done this year.
Yeah.
Still here, and this is a year we've doubled the turnover from the time I started.
Mm.
So there was loads of different stuff going on, and whenever I won that, I was very, very proud.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I remember the reading out the shortlist of who was shortlisted, and the winner is, and then the girl went in to start speaking about how this person has gave their entire, you know, life over this last year to the city and has done this, and I'm going, fuck, that's not me. You know what I mean? That's not me. And the winner is Chris Suter. And I was like, and I just remember looking at Nicola, and I was with loads of friends and everybody knew me then anyway.
Yeah.
And the lift that I got, when you get accredited with something, or the Matthew, what am I trying to say here? From my peers, from my peer group, the
recognition.
Recognition. Yes, is it recognition? I'm trying to think of
the support. The
I think it maybe is recognition. I think the recognition.
Acknowledgement. Stamp of approval.
Validation.
There you go.
I think it's validation.
Yeah.
The validation I got from, number one, my family and friends, including my dad, my brother, and then the people around me. was just see walking up and picking up that award was just exceptional. Because no matter, you know, you just think, no matter what happens, looking back over the years, the winners, and you look at all the winners, and you're like, oh my God. And then we, Chris Suter, Suter Menswear.
Mesmer.
You know what I mean? Flipping brilliant. That was really, really good.
Yeah.
And we'd won, you know, we had won we sort of smaller awards up to then, but because it was been twice the bridesmaid, and I was thinking, third time, I'm not going to go for it again, third time. If I lose this time, like, here, such is life. There's better people out there, yeah. You know. But no, won that. And then I suppose when it comes down to life, let me see, what's the biggest success? We'll leave the getting married to my darling wife out sure. of there and having my two beautiful kids.
Yep.
I would say, I think we can roll this right back to the start, Matthew.
Oh, I love it. That's what podcasting's all about.
Donegal.
Nice.
The cottage in Donegal. Because again, I don't want to go into too many more details, but what I had to do and the gambles I had to take over the last year and a half in lockdown, whenever the whole world was turning to shit, to make that happen, because it had to be bought. No one to give me a mortgage on it because it's 115-year-old.
Sure.
It's in Donegal. I live in Belfast. You know what I mean? The factors and the amount of things, Matthew, that went wrong over that whole transaction that would have put 999 million people off.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept going. And I even got to the point of saying where I gave the guy a deposit,
knowing
that I didn't have the money to buy it.
Yeah.
And I knew that something would happen. I just had the trust in myself and trust, and something will happen.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll just work harder than I've ever worked before to make this happen. And it did.
Brilliant.
I pulled it off.
Love that.
Like that is, yeah. That, particularly too, with the culmination of me, you know, achieving all the other wee sort of bits and pieces that I ever wanted in life. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, to have somewhere now, because obviously, Matthew, you and I connect, and you know what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
Donegal, for me, is just heaven on earth.
Yeah, it
and
is.
Now to have my own little part of heaven on earth up, that wee little small space that I now own, it's now got my name on the deed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That is flipping class, lad.
So special, man.
It's class.
So special. It. I'm really glad that you have that.
Yeah, it's cool, mate. We're going to go. Me and you're going to go.
Oh, mate, don't even say that.
I'm telling you.
Oh, mate.
Honestly.
Oh, lad.
Play golf?
Unfortunately not.
Doesn't matter. You can carry. You can carry.
I will. No, I honestly. Seriously? I will happily carry.
Yeah.
Because I love walking. So, you know, I'm literally like, I'm like, mate,
do you know what we'll do? We'll do, and I'm saying this live on the podcast. Me and you will go up someday and we'll stay for an overnight. We're going to do a wee tour. And
brilliant,
then
mate.
You'll have the keys and you can take your wee family up.
Because
that's what I want it for. Like, I am going to Airbnb it, but I do want to give it to friends free.
So
do you know what I mean?
Good,
and that's
lad.
Just kind of the way I am. I want, like, it's mum and dad particularly. Mum and dad have been obviously really, really good to me over the years because I'm mum and dad. And I wanted something for them that they can use, and they have, they didn't get Donegal the way I did.
Yeah,
none of my family do, by the way. I'm the only one in my family. So this hasn't been like a thing that's been kind of, you know,
instilled over generations.
No.
We've always gone to Donegal and it's always been Downings.
It's just me.
Yeah.
It's just me. They've never even really been to it.
Brilliant.
Right? Whereas I took mum and dad up after I bought it, because they were kind of, what are you buying up there for?
Yeah.
Nowhere and all that. So, see, they now get it.
Brilliant.
And they're now using it more than I do. They're up now every sort of 2-3 weeks. Dad, with him not being well, he sleeps better up there. 100%. The air's better.
Good for the air for him, yeah.
Yeah, so they're now using it. So even that's that makes me so proud, Matthew.
Brilliant.
And it's just, you know, they've even got their own key. And it says, on you go up to my cottage, you know, their son's cottage.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've worked him knock his bollocks in for it.
Yeah.
You know, they get great pride. They get great pride in that too, as then do I. It's back to that reciprocal selfish selflessness.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm getting a really good feeling from knowing I did that.
Yeah.
You know, I supplied them that. Do you know?
Perfect.
So I get a really good feeling out of it.
Perfect.
So right, next talk question.
It's a tough one for you, but if you take anyone from Northern Ireland out for a cup of coffee, who would you take them? Where would you take
I've
them?
I've heard you ask people these questions.
And why?
Right, has to be Northern Ireland.
Dead or alive, Northern Ireland.
Dead or alive, Northern Ireland. Right, yes, I should have had these answers prepared.
I like it better when they don't.
Oh,
see, when it rolls off people's tongue, I'm like, oh, that's no fun.
What about Nico? Nico, take Big Arlie
now. Made 100%.
Me, and it was actually me introduced Nico Arlie. We met up at Flippin', up at the Open. And Royal Portrush Golf Club, and Arlene was like, who's this guy? I was like, that's Nico. He just watches Arlene. You know what? He's actually a good kid, but like, we might have to throw him out someday, right? So, let me see. Who would I? Like, I would love to say, like, the categoric, probably answer that everyone or a lot of people gives. I would love to have known George Best.
Mm.
Like, as in his heyday, George Best. I'm a big football, fan.
Yeah, yeah.
I know him son Callum well enough now. And he is literally just an absolute flipping hero.
Yeah.
And he's got his issues and stuff like that too. Like, but what a lot of people don't truly understand and get from him is, like, he was the biggest, he was the first superstar.
Wow.
You know what I mean? He was just, if you think of what you call a superstar nowadays, George Best was the first superstar.
Seriously?
Seriously. There was no one before, like, between him and the Beatles. Do you know what I mean? He was the first, particularly in sports, he was the first real big sports superstar where people, like, hid outside his house and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like,
wow.
George, like, a lot of flipping, a lot of pressure put on him. And, like,
yeah.
It took its toll on him, as you know. I would love to have taken him out for a pint. Although he might have went out for more than one pint.
Sure, yeah.
Might end up, who knows what. But, yeah, so, like, let's take George Best to one side. And let me see, who else would I like to take out from Northern Ireland, dead or alive? Because, like, see, to be fair, see, most of the local celebrity-type folks now, I know them all now.
That's why I thought it would be a hard question.
It is a hard question. Yeah. So I'm trying to think of someone who's passed away that would have had an impact on my life. And let me see. Golfers, maybe? No. Chris Dupont, no. Matthew, that's a tough question.
I'm really satisfied with your Best answer.
Yeah, Georgie Best, but that's so easy.
But that's, I don't want to give you an easy answer. I know we all have a desire to stand out, but, like, if it's George Best, it's George Best.
It is.
And,
like,
that's fine. Yeah. It's just okay, Chris.
Just to kind of
don't cry.
No, just kind of ask him. George, what was it like being George Best?
Literally, yeah.
Oh, flip. Actually, to bring it sort of closer to home, there was a 2-year hiatus in between whenever we were starting up the Carlo business and going to uni that I was also then working for my uncle, who was a house builder, and we built a house down in Port of Vogie in George Best's back garden.
Brilliant.
Actually, I never met him, yeah, but he was there. Yeah. And we met Alex a couple of times, his then wife. So, yeah. But I never actually got that. There was times where I would have went down to the local shop hoping to bump into him in Port of Ogie, but I never did bump into him. You know, just went, George Best, mate.
Yeah.
But, I never did.
That's
never
cool.
did. But, yeah, Matthew, sorry, I can't have a more original
exotic answer.
Do you know what? I'm actually raging. I actually wanted, you know, see if I'd have remembered you did this in your podcast, I'd have had something so profound that you would have went, whoa, Chris, are you serious?
There's been plenty of profound moments here. Don't you worry.
Oh,
don't
dear.
You worry. And you taught me that George Best was the first superstar. And then, because again, he's so far removed.
So I know. And he was just mayhem whenever he was at it. It's like there was no, like, you know, I don't know if you heard the news today, but, like, Jeff Hurst was on the news this morning, and like, for him to get a trial at West Ham, his dad just wrote to West Ham. Do you know what I mean? Just, dear Mr. Chairman of West Ham Football Club, my son Jeff Hurst is a great footballer, team. Would you give him a trial?
Crazy.
And that's how things were done back then. And then Jeff Hurst went on to play for West Ham and score 2 goals in the World Cup Final 66 and all that sort of stuff. That was, you know, life wasn't like the way it was. Now, Jeff Hurst would have just walked down to Tesco's or whatever it was back then for a pint of loaf or a pint and loaf. Whereas whenever George Best hit the thing, the world exploded because it was Beatlemania. Mm-hmm. And that's why they called him the fifth Beatle. Do you know what I mean? Because he was just so famous. Like, he couldn't go anywhere in the world without being recognised.
Madness.
Matt, and a wee kid from here, from Craigie.
Just madness.
You know what I mean? Playing football.
Final one. You ready?
Go. This is the one you asked Nico when he said about me, isn't it?
There's two of them, and I'm debating.
Go.
I'll take the risk. What's the kindest thing someone's ever done for you?
I know, and I thought I should have prepared this.
Well, I tell you what, choose your own adventure, ready?
All right, go.
Because I literally have to go.
I know. Is this not going to be a 3-hour one? Right.
Either kindest moment, or kindest thing someone's ever done for you, or advice you would give to 18-year-old Chris.
Right. Yes, let's skip the kindest thing, right?
Let's go.
Because, do you know what, the more I'm thinking about it, not that I would offend anybody, but so many people, Matthew, over my life have been so kind
to
me.
It's the problem with the question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't actually, by the way, I know, and, like, Nico, actually, see, when I listened to Nico's podcast, I was on my way from Donegal.
Look at that.
And do you know what? See, when he said what he did, like, I literally started crying. Honestly.
I love that.
I never even, you know, whenever he said that I've helped him so much and created what I've done for him and never asked for anything, I never even thought of it like that. And
I don't know if it came across at the end. Like, I think we were both crying.
Yeah.
Both him and me.
Yeah, I was just like, what? You're right enough. I've never asked for anything. Nico, I'll take a Submariner and a ceramic Daytona. Now that you've brought that up, I never have asked for anything. I'll have a Submariner and a ceramic Daytona, please. But you're right. And again, Matthew, that's me doing what I do to try and be the best human I can possibly be. What would I give 18-year-old Chris? Right, I'm going to give a funny answer.
Perfect.
And then I'm going to give a more profound. My funny answer is literally, let me see, that was 20 years ago. Whenever Bitcoin comes out, Christopher, buy as much flipping Bitcoin as you possibly can. In fact, sink the entire life savings into it. Sell everything and buy Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Apart from that, at 18, just keep doing it as you're doing it, mate. You're going to do all right.
Mm. Do you know what, mate? It's really the only answer.
It is, because you know what, see the amount of times, Matthew, that people have tried to curtail me or suppress me or anything else, and I have just stubbornly pushed through it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here about to be 39 years old, and I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
I'm doing all right, and I'm helping as many people as I can. I am doing life my way, and yeah, apart from buy Bitcoin, there's not a whole lot. Like, and I have, Matthew, I have made lots of mistakes. Yeah. I have hurt many people. Not many people. I've heard a few people, including Nicola Flipp. I wasn't the greatest boyfriend, let me just tell you. But again, every single mistake or wrong thing that I've done has taught me a huge lesson, and I have learned from everyone.
Mm.
And I wouldn't change any of my mistakes. Lovely. You know, I would do every mistake all over again, because again, that's what's learned me. That's what's made me who I am today.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have no regrets, Matthew. None. Categorically none. Apart from plagiarizing my degree. But no, it worked out well. It worked out well. No, honestly, I have no regrets, and that's it. And honestly, see, going forward, see, like, so I'm going to be 40. I plan to live them 87. For my next 48 years, whatever it's going to be, I'm going to live life exactly the same way I'm doing it now.
Yeah.
And if it works out, great. And if it doesn't work out, great.
Yeah.
I'm just happy, mate. Full stop.
Awesome. Well, look, I'm genuinely very happy to have connected with you.
Me too, mate.
This was really fun. And good. I've loved to explore some of the weird and wonderful parts of your story that I'm still shook by the car business, if I'm honest. That's the bit that's out of all of this, it's the bit that I just can't grab my head around.
Can you imagine? So overalls, long hair. I had long hair, Matthew. Always wore a hat. Do you know what I mean? And literally covered in oil, grease, dirt, eyes upon, beard. I had a beard, not a full beard, but like just, you know, never really shaved.
Epic, bro.
I, like, worlds apart from the flipping guy that I have to be now because of the business.
Sure.
But, and again, wouldn't change any of it. You know, made money, lost money, you know, made mistakes, learned from them all, made more mistakes, learned from them. And like, that's, again, when we come back to mentoring and kind of trying to teach people, my advice is go out there and make as many mistakes as you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. And see, when you make a mistake, make it all. And keep making mistakes and keep learning. You know, don't let anybody tell you. Just get out there, do it yourself, make a mistake and learn from it. Yeah. It's got me to here, do you know? Mm-hmm. It's got me to here. So, and we're doing all right. We're doing all right. So who knows what the next thing.
The next 48.
Yep. By the way, before you finish off your podcast series, I want number 2 with my 10 coffee shops. talking about how we're taking over the world with coffee.
Well, I mean, when's that going to happen?
That'll be happening. I plan by year 2. So what are we now?
So year 2?
Yeah, year 2. I want 10.
Mate, I'm always open to having people back that I enjoy.
Yeah.
And I've really enjoyed this. So
yeah.
I tell you this, here's a deal. You've made a deal to me. I'll make a deal for you.
Yep.
When your 10th shop opens,
yep,
I'll do a live podcast with you.
Let's do it. Well, Matthew, thank you, by the way, because even from having this podcast, I've learned stuff about myself too. Yeah. You know, so I am an egotistical utilitarian.
I'm glad you remember.
I'm going to remember that,
man. I'm glad you remember.
I'm going to tell people, and they're going to go, "You're a what?" Like, am I an egotistical? Because again, most people just concentrate on the egotism. Go, I thought that about you, sitter.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to hold it. Utilitarian. Yeah. You know, that's, you know, me doing it for others. Yeah. So man. Okay, look. Matthew, for me, like, I know, everybody has issues, everybody has bad days and stuff like that there. For me, if you just approach life with a smile and try and help other people, because that then helps you, look, you'll work through anything. Yeah. You know, you'll just work through anything. But it's about being a good human.
Awesome.
Cool.
Thank you so much.